Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and happy Easter Sunday. This is Seeds of Change and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. Mom is with us. Hello, Mom. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Oh, I can barely hear you.
Uh-oh. I wonder what's happening.
Yeah, you sound about a million miles away.
That's
a tiny bit better, but it's a tiny bit better. Are you on speakerphone or something?
Yeah, it's the same one that I always use. How's that?
So that's a little better.
I'm sad.
You're okay now. Maybe just get a little closer. Can you get a little closer?
I think I can. How's that?
That's better.
I have the microphone right in front of my mouth, so that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, if the audio is bad, that's going to be annoying the whole time.
It's not bad. You just sound a tiny bit far away.
I wonder what's happening. Sometimes I worry, of course, because, you know, I use these for my work. So anyway, happy Resurrection Day. Lots of good news to report from the past week, and I'm excited about sharing some of it.
Yay.
Okay,
and then Ty is going to come in, and Sabrina, I believe Ty and Sabrina are coming in the next hour or so to talk about legal terms, which is always exciting.
Good stuff.
And then if I've got extra time after that, then I'm going to do the second agreement.
Nice. Good stuff. So today's good news is my yard is getting better. The farm is seeing daily improvements. I'm excited about that. I keep being reminded that I'm 62, though. I forget that I'm 62 until I try to do stuff. And then it kicks my butt. Plus, we've had more apocryphal rain this last couple of days. And so when Danielle used to talk about chemtrails, I'm like, oh, here we go with another freaking conspiracy theory. And I would chuckle to myself, well, she'll probably be proved right in the end because she's batting 1,000 for her conspiracy theories. And I suppose I thought that the idea behind chemtrails was that they were poisoning us. But what I have come to realize is that what they're doing is weather engineering. And I mean, I know it for a fact, okay, because California doesn't get rain like this. We get rain, you know, and then we'll have periods of drought that are really difficult. And because of those periods of drought, because we don't quote unquote get rain in California, there's no infrastructure for when we get what we've had the last 2 years in a row. Last year, we got 37.5 inches of rain in a 4-month period. We never get that. Okay. Now, having said that, we have these regular, every 6 or 7 years, we have something called an El Nino. And then usually it's either followed by a La Nina or preceded by a La Nina, where we get heavy rains, which is, you know, for us, that's always great news. My grandson, Danielle's son, never saw it rain until he was 6 years old. I'll never forget it, the first time he saw it rain. It was very exciting stuff. We were in a six and a half year drought. But these last 2 years, and I've lived in California my entire life, Danielle's and I's family were fourth generation California native. Never been like this. Because what's been happening is that it all comes at once. And it's been really difficult dealing with it these last couple of years. And so this cloud seeding idea, here's the thing. The idea behind cloud seeding, I suppose, makes sense in a drought risk place like Southern California. We live in the desert. The desert. And so I suppose the idea behind cloud seeding or making it rain is a good idea. The problem is we have a bunch of freaks that live in this state that won't let us build infrastructure to support something like that. So when it does rain that hard, that fast, it has nowhere to go.
And they can't clean out the drains. Because if there's a native plant growing in a storm drain, they have to, it's a law that says you have to purchase land to relocate that plant or it has to stay where it is. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's nutty. It's stupid. It's nutty. It's crazy. We haven't built a dam in the state of California since the 1920s.
No, we're taking them down.
We haven't built any water storage facilities. They took a bunch of them down up in Northern California over a bait fish. It was called
Delta smelt.
What was the name of the fish, Daniel? The Delta smelt. The Delta smelt. And so all of the water that we've been getting goes right out into the ocean to protect this Delta smelt and native plants and all this business. Okay, cool. We're protecting the environment. Cool. And I get all that. But in the meantime, houses washed away here in Southern California, the last big one we got in January, and it has proceeded into February. And, we're supposed to, March is supposed to come in like a lion and go out like a lamb. Well, we're not seeing any lamb. Yesterday, we got 1.2 inches of rain in 3 hours. We had a ton more today, and it comes in these big cloud bursts. Anyway, I'm not necessarily complaining. I'm just explaining why Grandma's tired. Because we've been trying to deal with the water, deal with it in a sane way. Today we finished the roof for the coop, which is exciting. I installed a few other devices to help my life to be easier when it rains, which is cool. And then also cleaned up a big mess that was out front, which our government at work and nasty neighbors combined. I got a citation for some pine needles, and from the pine tree that belongs to the city, and also
that we can't cut down.
That belongs to the nasty. That we can't cut down, bamboo that belongs to the neighbor who is the one that filed the report. And having said that, we got that cleaned up today, so that feels good. Front yard looks nice. I'm excited. Anyway, I'm ready to do the good news. Unless now that I'm done with my rant about cloud seeding, which I don't know that much about, Danielle probably could speak with a little more. Authoritative language about what all this geoengineering bull crap is. Just let God do it.
You're done with the good news. I may play something this is from PBS, but it's the truth. I mean, we've got historical record of it. In 1915, San Diego hired a rainmaker and floods ensued. So I might play that after you're done with the good news. Looks like we have somebody listening in the chat. So welcome, listener. We're glad you're here.
So here's the problem with this geoengineering stuff, and I really am glad we have a listener, and welcome to the show. When you start to play God and you don't, here's the thing, you have no idea. It's the unintended consequences that are the problem. So just like in 1915, when they hire a rainmaker, then we have massive floods. Okay, so it all comes at one time, and that's the problem. So, deep breath. I hope my audio is not too bad.
You're still a little bit low, so if you can speak up, that would be great. If not, we can still hear you. Everybody, just turn your volumes up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have a little bit extra from the Missouri v. Biden case and why this case matters. So a go-to, and I highly recommend, a guy named Brian Cates. He's been recently publishing on a platform called Vigilant News. He's just one of those people that I've been following for coming up on a decade now, for information that I feel is important. You always get the truth from this guy. I've checked him, and he's a good source. So Brian Cates, Vigilant News is another one of those aggregators that is coming in hot. So Brian Cates is the guy, Draw and Strike. He was on Twitter. Probably is again because he was one of the accounts that got taken down in the bloodbath of right after January 6th. Got an account going, and we're always going to follow this guy. Same thing, but I normally just follow him on Telegram, which is another great place to look for news, just in case you're wondering. He coined the phrase new media, and I'm sure that's been, maybe it wasn't him originally, but he talks about how we are the news now.
Yeah.
And continuing and it's, that theme
just
about...
Just to clarify, his channel is The Library, correct?
That is Harold Wren.
Oh, wrong guy.
And
sorry.
Brian Cates is another one, though, that you and I both have been looking at for years. And so what's happened... I'm going to just back up the boat a little bit. If you ask me, one thing that Donald Trump did for this country was expose the propaganda, deep state, mainstream media. I don't even call them media because they're all they are is propaganda outlets for the DNC. But he
stenographers.
They're basically stenographers, exactly. He highlighted to the American people just how corrupt these people are, what their obvious agenda. They used to try to hide it. I mean, it's always been like that, but they used to at least try to hide it. But during the Trump original Trump campaign and during his administration, they showed their butt. So nobody will ever trust them again, which is exactly how it should be. You shouldn't be trusting. Anyway, you should be checking, reading, finding yourself. And people have sort of, you know, for a lot of years, just sat back and absorbed the news. We call it news, we call it propaganda. And they were, you know, being lied to and led in certain directions by what Danielle calls the mockingbird media. And it's true. It's true. And we didn't, but here's the truth. Now we know. Which is great news. So he did an article after the case was litigated in the Supreme Court. And he said, he called it Missouri versus Biden, why this case matters. We very well could end up in a constitutional crisis if SCOTUS tells the deep state to stop engaging in unconstitutional censorship to protect false government narratives. Boy, what a great sentence that is. What a great headline that is.
Can you repeat it a little louder, please?
I can. We very well could end up in a constitutional crisis if SCOTUS tells the deep state to stop engaging in unconstitutional censorship to protect false government narratives. Should the Supreme Court, Supreme Court find that the Biden administration's censorship state is illegal and that it has been unconstitutionally censoring millions of Americans by suppressing accurate and factual information to protect government false narratives? I don't see the censorship state machine just neatly rolling over and dying on command. That's the problem, okay? So last week, we talked a little bit about them going at one of the colleges, and I think it was Georgetown University. They're digging in and finding another one of these tentacles that the feds were going through. You know, this was sort of their cover. So they could, because they can't actually, you know, call and say, hey, take this down. They have to go through one of their cutouts. And they found a big, ugly, nasty one at Georgetown University. They've been fighting them the entire time during this Missouri v. Biden process. So Brian Case's argument, what are they going to do? Just turn it off because the Supreme Court orders them to? I don't really see that happening. And he's right. Not while an entrenched federal CIA deep state bureaucracy knows its ability to pursue its agenda is foundationally dependent upon the ability to spread false narratives through the fake news media while viciously censoring any challenges on social media to those false narratives. So there it is there. In a nutshell, it's saying, Brian Case is saying, they're not going to stop. And as a matter of fact, that was their argument to the Supreme Court. Is that we have to keep doing this to keep everybody safe. Okay, well, we know better than that. But according to Brian Case, he says, a dying animal does desperate things. The approaching 2024 election is key. The deep state is counting on being able to censor and suppress during the buildup to the election, during the election itself, and, of course, in the aftermath of the election. If it gets told by SCOTUS during this spring or summer that it cannot do that, that it must shut its precious censorship apparatus down completely, and the deep state tells SCOTUS to F off and keep censoring anyway, or it made a pretense of following the court's order but gets caught red-handed doing a very bad thing, we'd end up in the constitutional crisis, all right, with the election at the very center of it. He said, so I'll be following this case with keen interest in observing how the Biden administration responds if the SCOTUS rules in favor of the plaintiff. So I still believe that that's going to happen. It'll be 6-3, which will not be good for the home team, but because they'll be able to say, well, look at these dissents, whatever.
That's not how the court works. If they lose, they lose.
I get it. I know, but so you'll hear two things. It was a 6-3, and they're illegitimate anyway. It's a Trump court.
If there is a Super Bowl, or let's say a baseball game, that is 6-3, do they say, well, the other team played really well, and so we should just let them have it?
That's what they would like. Yes. So you have spoken truly. That's exactly what we're going to hear. We're going to hear two things. That there was a lot of good stuff in that dissent. And B, the Supreme Court is illegitimate. Look what happened when they overturned Roe v. Wade. We're still feeling the brunt of that, right? Okay, so here's this behind the curtain, shards of glass, inside media's 12 splintering reality. So back to the original premise about how the media does not have the power that it used to, thank God. This is an Axios article, which I very rarely would quote one of their articles. It says, you can't understand November's election or America itself without reckoning with how our media attention has shattered into a bunch of misshapen pieces. Thank you, Donald J. Trump. Think of it as a shards of glass phenomenon. Not long ago, we all saw news and information through common windows, TVs, newspapers, cable. Now we find it in scattered chunks that match our age, habits, and politics and passions. Wow, you mean people are actually going out and finding their own news, and Axios is not happy about that. Why it matters. They always have a why it matters in Axios articles. traditional media, at least, as a center of dominant power, is dead. Everybody stand up and applaud, please. Yay!
Yay!
If Axios is admitting that, then Donald J. Trump has done his job. It goes on to say, social media as its replacement for news in the internet era is declining in dominance. What comes next? America is splintering into more than a dozen news bubbles based on ideology, wealth, jobs, age, and location. This means when you get your news, the voices you trust, and even the topics and cultural figures you follow could be wholly different from the person sitting next to you. You mean people have different opinions? People think differently?
Jesus.
People believe differently? Amazing. So it says, so instead of a red America and blue America, we'll have a dozen or more Americas and realities. This will make understanding public opinion and finding common agreement even more complex and elusive.
Oh,
so he goes on to say, he names off all the different bubbles, which is the Musketeers. This is a fast-growing, mostly male group who feed off a Twitter podcast, especially All In and Joe Rogan, for shame, and follow independent reporters led by Barry Weiss through social media or newsletters. Oh, shocking. Instagrammers, okay, so a lot of people are getting their news from Instagram. I don't have an Instagram account, so I don't know, but TikTok kids, new age grandmas. Here we are. Here's me. Listen to the description of new age grandmas. Consumers of news on Facebook have been trending older. Yes, Facebook has deliberately de-emphasized news over the past 3 years, emphasizing what Meta Global Affairs President Nick Clegg calls babies, barbecues, and bar mitzvahs. But a lot remains. Right-wing grandpas. Senior citizens, especially men, still flock to Fox News, especially in prime time, and especially around popular personalities. They would have been big Rush Limbaugh fans back in the 90s, okay? MAGA mind melders. they're talking about Jack Posobiec, Mike Cernovich, Alex Brusewich, Tucker Carlson, Don Jr., Steve Bannon's War Room, right? And they're mad about this stuff. Liberal warriors, think of Rachel Maddow, and then it goes on and on and on about the different niches. The bottom line, all the shards mean it's much more effort for you, the consumer, to find healthy news. And that's in quotes, and there's a link to it. It doesn't waste your time or insult your intelligence, and much harder to make sense of the realities around you. So we'll just tell you what to think. That's according to Axios, and they're mad about it. They're having themselves a little baby fit over the idea that people are actually going out and deciding which news they want to listen to, sort through, absorb. And I couldn't be happier about that. So here's some great news. Gender-affirming care has been outlawed in France. They've done it in the United Kingdom. They're working. There's a whole bunch of different countries that have decided that letting little kids make decisions about cutting off their dicks or their breasts and sterilizing themselves where they'll never be able to have an orgasm or to have children for the rest of their lives, they've decided this might not be a good idea.
I thought we already decided that genital mutilation was a bad idea. I don't know. I don't know why this has changed.
You bigot, you're going to kill a bunch of transgender children by saying that. This is how they have tried to silence us, okay? You're not even supposed to use the word genital mutilation. You're supposed to say gender-affirming care.
Okay, but we're talking about cutting off dicks and clits, right?
Absolutely. And breasts.
Okay. Just checking. Because remember, like back in the day, like when it came to like Muslims, you know, cutting off mm-hmm. genitalia, that was barbaric, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, this weekend, this is a twitchy article provided by a guy named Grateful Calvin for March 25th. I like Twitchy. They mock people and they pick out some of the most ridiculous stories, but they're absolutely on the cutting edge about what's trending on Twitter, which is where a lot of people get their news from. This weekend, the world is waking up to the horror that is, quote, gender-affirming care. Of course, that term is one of the biggest lies ever told, but it becomes even more horrific when it is applied to children. This weekend, the French Senate joined a growing number of nations trying to ban the barbaric practice of sterilizing and mutilizing. You see the terminology? This is what it actually is, okay? Sterilization and mutilization of children before they're even close to an age when they're capable of informed consent. To date, Norway, Finland, Sweden, Holland, and the UK have either banned or placed severe restrictions on trans surgeries and hormones for minors along with 22 states in the United States. On Saturday, independent journalist Michael Schellenberger, who broke the WPATH files that completely demolished the agency's alleged expertise, posted a thread on Twitter detailing a damning Senate report out of France. For years, experts said, this is Michael Schellenberger, who I also have respect for. He's the one that did the Twitter files. That's who Musk trusted enough to give the information to put out, which were blockbusters. And of course, the quote-unquote mainstream media mocked and censored. Who knew? For years, experts said that we should give drugs and surgeries to kids confused about their gender, given the sterility, loss of sexual function, and regret that's been changing. Now a French Senate report calls it one of the greatest ethical scandals in the history of medicine. Hallelujah. So the report starts, the headline says, sex reassignment in minors may be medical history's greatest ethical standard, French report says. Senators want to table a bill banning gender transition treatments for under 18. A lengthy investigation initiated by the center-right Les Republicains, Senator Jacqueline Estuche-Brignio, has been made public. It is alarmed by what has been described as one of the greatest ethical scandals in the history of medicine, namely sex reassignment in minors made possible by the administration of puberty blockers and surgery. It says that the report's authors accuse these associations of unreasonably encouraging. So this is what's happening. A kid walks in, confused, 12, 13, you know what's happening in their minds and bodies at that age. They're bonkers. And says, I think I'm a boy. And immediately they're given these, within an hour, okay? You could sit down with somebody for an hour, a child, and they start this transition. It says that my daughter, so I'll give you an example. Mauve Sell, a mother whose daughter underwent gender transition treatment, told Le Figaro, a child is not old enough to ask to have her body altered. My daughter needed a certificate of a psychiatrist, which she obtained after a one-hour consultation. The doctors didn't explain the consequences of puberty blockers, she said. My daughter didn't realize that life wasn't going to be so easy with all these treatments. She was a brilliant little girl, but now she's failing at school, and she is far from having found the solution to her problem. So it goes on at quite at length about all the different countries and all the different reasons why that these medicines are not good for children. Additionally, when they start cutting off healthy tissue, it changes them irrevocably. And it looks like we're going to be at the end of this nonsense. So I'm just going down one by one as I put them in my I'm not putting them in kind of an order, but all of them are good news. I'm excited to let you know that the Secretary of State, Wes Allen, says Alabama's new absentee voting law in effect for November. The new law criminalizes payments for the distribution and collection of absentee ballot applications for the general election in November. So good job, Alabama. They're stopping this crap. the fraud that occurs with these absentee ballots, with the monetary enticement for people to go out and get as many of them as they can. And that means that they're going to be messing around, and we know for a fact that that they have been doing that. Let's see. So Ohio volunteers uncovered massive irregularities in voter database. So I said this last week. The people from 2020 that were outraged over the election being stolen from us haven't stopped. They're still going. They're still digging. They're still finding evidence that not only was 2020 stolen, very likely every election for the last 20 or 30 years has been fooled around with, and they're going to stop it for 2024. Ohio went in the spring of 2021, volunteer investigators from Ohio acquired publicly available voter data for all 88 counties and started their analysis. Over the next year, the researchers found hundreds of thousands of records in their state voter rolls with irregular data for which they couldn't identify consistent explanations no matter who they asked. In late summer of 2022, they reached out to Molly Hornick, co-leader of the New York Citizens Audit, whose team had identified similar inaccuracies in the New York State data. In 2023, Hornick and Harry Howery, an expert in cybercrime and election law, found the United Sovereign Americans founded United Sovereign Americans and developed a legal strategy for securing the validity of the 2024 election based on federal civil rights law and Supreme Court precedent. The National Voter Registration Act of 1993 requires election rolls to be accurate. The Ohio team has collected more than a million pieces of evidence of apparent violations of law that called into serious question the accuracy of Ohio's statewide voter roll database at the time of the 2022 general election and its subsequent certification. So they went through and they found tons of evidence that the Ohio voter rolls were corrupt all the way through. And this is the only way Democrats can win elections. Not that they take Ohio. It's sort of purple. So that's good news. Let's see. I'm looking. Oh, okay. Here we go. So and Pennsylvania has some great news as well. The third U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that mail-in ballots with no dates can't be counted by Pennsylvania election officials. Democrats were fighting so that every ballot that showed up would count. This ruling stops that insanity.
Quick question. Wasn't that always the actual law?
2020 changed everything. In the lead up, they went into, this is when people talk about the election being stolen, 2020, one of the ways they did it, very quietly, without going into the legislature, Secretary of State changed voter laws and rules willy-nilly. Like, we're going to accept every ballot that comes in. We're going to put in drop boxes everywhere we feel like it. So let me read that again. It says, has ruled that mail-in ballots with no date can't be counted. So you're telling me that in Pennsylvania, that means that they did in 2020. If you remember, there were what appeared to be that they had like 100% of people voted in the Pennsylvania election. That never happened. It will never happen. 100% of people never vote. They even had like extra votes. I don't remember the number, but it was blasphemous. Okay. So what this is telling us is that they got sued for it, is they were counting in a bunch of ballots that didn't even have any dates on them, much less a signature match. So there you go. Another one of those shadowy groups that I told you about that are doing the censorship at the bidding of the United States government. So GOP House will officially investigate Biden's dark and shadowy 2020 Color Revolution group. Interesting name. The Republican-led House has just kicked off an investigation into what's being whispered about as a secretive left-wing endeavor known as the Transition Integrity Project. You've probably heard that name from me before. So you might be wondering what the heck is a Transition Integrity Project. Well, it's not about pushing a trans agenda on kids or chopping up their private parts, despite what it might sound like at first glance, but it's equally sinister. The group's actions are shrouded in shadows. This article is from Revolver News, another news aggregator that I trust. This is from their, this is an editorial. But it's equally sinister. The group's actions are shrouded in shadows, but what we do know is their tactics are a lot more color revolution. Okay, so I'd like to explore that term. Pop quiz. What is a color revolution, Danielle? Do you know?
Gosh, not enough, not well enough to explain it, but I know that there's been, gosh, color revolutions in communist countries.
Yes. Okay, so color, the aim of, this is Wikipedia, okay. The aim
I'm
of
giving
the
myself
color revolution, yeah, it's a C-plus, was to establish Western-style liberal democracy in those countries. Okay, the color revolution, sometimes colored revolution, were a series of often nonviolent protests accompanying attempted or successful changes of government and society that took place in post-Soviet states. Okay, but what you can glean from that, though, is it's our government pulling strings behind the scenes in order to change the regime. And there are people in the United States that believe that what happened in 2020 was a color revolution. First, they censored us. They silenced us for months leading up to the election with COVID. And with election, and then they took over the country. So here we go. So, but what we do know is their tactics are a lot more color revolution than anything resembling gender reform. According to Wikipedia, the Transition Integrity Project is a series of political scenario exercises. Okay, so they get in a room and they war game out what it's going to look like. Okay. They political scenario exercises across the U.S. that involved over 100 of the nation's left-wing and uniparty regime loyalists, senior government and campaign leaders, academics, journalists, polling experts, and even former federal and state officials who rolled up their sleeves to dive deep into what many describe as the Biden regime's color revolution. Now, here's the intriguing and shadowy twist. While the names listed below were supposedly front and center in the group, rumors suggest that an even bigger, more powerful group is working behind the scenes. Think of it, a group of over 100, each contributing their own part to this color revolution. Wait, are you sitting down?
Yes.
Ready for the list? John Podesta, yes. Jennifer Granholm, Trey Grayson, Donna Brazil. Bill Kristol, Edward Luce, Max Boot, David Frum, Michael Steele.
That's okay. Disgusting.
So, I'm gross. I am so grossed out right now. So, there was a story that popped up right after the 2020 election where these people sat in a room and war-gamed what would happen after they stole the election and how they would stop everyone from speaking about it, who they would contact, and how they would deal with the fallout of people being pissed off. A color revolution. Revolver has been all over this color revolution story and this Transition Integrity Project for quite some time. So they were planning to steal it, and they did. As a matter of fact, we wrote a bombshell piece on this plot 4 years ago. So this was the story that I was just talking about. A bipartisan group of about 80 political operatives and academics have been involved in discussions about what could happen if Donald Trump were to lose the November election and then contest the results, potentially refusing to leave the White House. Sound familiar? The Boston Globe first reported on Sunday that the group of Democrats and Republicans, all of whom opposed the president, Bill Kristol, Max Boot, David Frum, Michael Steele, since they have to have some sort of Republican light people on this transition integrity project, but they all loathe Donald Trump. The Boston Globe first reported on Sunday that the group of Democrats and Republicans, all of whom opposed the president, convened an online meeting to hash out scenarios as part of what has been called the Transition Integrity Project in June. So this was a Newsweek article that Revolver News has been going after, trying to figure out what these assholes were doing. In 2006-2007, Brooks was a special counsel in the so of course, what they do not say about this ostensibly bipartisan group is that its founder, Rosa Brooks, is a longtime close associate of George Soros and his Open Society Foundation. She serves both as special counsel to the president at George Soros Open Society Foundation and as a board member of the Open Society Foundation. So we have one of those deep state freaks getting together with a bunch of other deep state freaks and planning out what they're going to do if Donald Trump loses the election and then refuses to leave his office. So finally, the GOP is going after them and trying to figure out what is, what they did. I bet you we're going to find out some stuff. Will they have to pay for it? I don't know. But speaking of paying for it, is justice coming for victims of COVID wrongful death? This article was printed on March 30th in the Gateway Pundit. And it's got a picture of St. Fauci putting his fingertips to his forehead, looking perplexed. This is guest post by Paul S. Gardner, retired U.S. Army officer, Vietnam veteran. Tens of thousands of American families continue to demand justice for what they believe are the wrongful deaths, murders, they call it, of loved ones during the COVID-19 pandemic. Such justice soon may be coming due in large part to the dedicated efforts of two attorneys in Florida. Did you know about this case? Pro bono to thoroughly research, me neither. I just found out. Pro bono to thoroughly research the criminal codes of 25 states to identify crimes committed by various high-level officials and organizations prior to and during the COVID-19 pandemic. One of the attorneys, a former prosecutor, prepared extensive legal briefs documenting strong evidence of crimes that have been submitted to the Attorneys General of Texas and Florida. The brief was subsequently filed with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So they're doing it at a state level, smart. Article goes on to say, in Texas, a total of 22 county district attorneys have received the 27-page brief plus exhibits for review and action. Similar filings soon will be made with Louisiana and South Carolina attorneys general and perhaps several other state attorneys general. Further information about the Texas brief is here, and there's a link. And the Florida brief is here. There's a link. The Texas legal brief, for example, filed at the request of 46 next of kin Texas families. This is how they're going to get them. List the following accused persons as subjects.
Wait. You might be a little excited. Hold on. You might be a little excited. You're breaking up. Okay. Please take a deep breath. Go back one sentence. And begin.
The Texas legal brief, for example, filed at the request of 46 next of kin Texas families, lists the following accused persons as subjects of a criminal investigation. Guess who's at the top of the list, Danielle? Ding, 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 pop quiz.
Fauci.
Bingo!
Yes, A plus.
Yes, yes. A list of the usual suspects, Frances Collins, Deborah Birx, Rachel Walensky, Stephen Hahn,
yeah, but she has such nice
Robert
scars.
Redfield. She has really beautiful scars.
I like them.
Peter Daszak, Rick Bright, and they're charged, the alleged cons, listen to this, capital murder, manslaughter,
woo-hoo,
trafficking of persons, participation in enterprise through racketeering or unlawful debt collection, engaging in organized criminal activity. Did you hear the word RICO? Injury to a child, elderly individual, or disabled adult, abandoning or endangering a child, elderly individual, or disabled adult, unlawful restraint. These are beautiful. Okay. Because of who we have at the top of, do not ever hear me call them our leaders because they're not. At the top of the food chain, we're not going to get any relief. We're not going to get what we want from them because they're all in on it. The way to do this is through the states. And these are families that have standing to sue. And I'm super excited. And guess who was in charge of getting these through? This effort to investigate Anthony Fauci and other accused persons is supported by donations from individuals and organizations such as Fight Like a Flynn PAC. Yes, I love him. General Flynn, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. If the evidence supports criminal charges and indictments, the victims of COVID wrongful deaths and their suffering families may finally receive accountability and justice for the egregious crimes committed against them. Further information about this justice-seeking effort can be obtained by contacting the Vera's Law Group. So this is the lawyers that are suing. Grandma's very excited about that. Mom is very excited about that. And Anthony Fauci, again, the picture showing him, he looks really perplexed and sad.
Okay, let me
that
just...
That is all
let me
I
just,
have for today.
Oh,
go
okay,
ahead.
Perfect timing then. Because let me just talk about something that happened today. Two things. Number one, I was at... I was having a little get together with my husband's mother, so my mother-in-law, and she's like, "Oh yeah, you know, I see you on Facebook. Everyone, I feel like a stalker because I have to go in to your profile in order to see your posts." And I was like, "Well, that's because I'm shadow banned." And she goes, "What's shadow banned?"
Oh.
Had no idea what shadow banning was or meant or anything like that. And then she told me because we only see her every once in a while, maybe like once a year. After the last time we saw each other, which was last April, she went into the hospital with a blood clot.
How come you
didn't even
know?
And of course, the she already knew. She only got one shot, and she stopped after that because she got a blood clot and COVID bad. She got, lots of symptoms bad.
And so she's like,
I'm not going to take any more of those COVID shots, you know, because I had a blood clot. And the doctor tried to tell me that it was because of my inactivity when I had COVID. She's like, I've been inactive for many, many years. So she's like, I told that asshole I'm not getting any more shots, you know. So even people who aren't being exposed to the right kind of information still have
right.
the intuitive knowledge that there's something wrong with the shot. And that's why there, it's like a, what, a 20% of people got the latest COVID booster? Less than?
Yep, they're not taking it anymore. Especially because it was senior citizens that they were going going after to continue to get them to take shot after shot after shot.
Yep.
Her heart.
You know, and this is somebody who obviously isn't getting exposed to the right knowledge. I mean, I'm her daughter-in-law, and I am an active user on Facebook, and she has to go search my name in order to get
too.
More friends. You do too.
Yeah.
There's something really, really wrong here. And honestly, that's why I started this show, is because people, if we were exposed to the right food, news, and health, we would not be in this situation.
Yeah.
So, you know, to your point, these lawsuits need to happen. You talked about two lawsuits today, you know, one being the Missouri versus Biden, which is about information and exposure to information. And we've got Axie Fit over it. And the second one is about COVID damage to family members. You know, it's really, I think the tides are changing. And so for that, I would say that we all watch out. Like, they're going to start doing desperate things, like you said earlier, to keep this kind of control. And so, you know, fortunately, we know who's in charge. People are still going to be scared, but things are changing, and I'm very, very happy about that. It's almost like, you know, there's some kind of going on.
There is, and here's the thing. They're not going to just go silently. They're going to fight harder, and we need to be prepared for that. We need to just like that Axios article, keep going and searching out your own news. Keep going and, you know, clicking on people's posts that you know you should be seeing, okay? And also, I think there's a way you can, I don't know if on Facebook, you used to be able to just see first, most recent. They took that button away, by the way.
They did. They also, just really quick, when you go on your news tab, it says, first thing, Facebook news is going away soon. The Facebook news product will no longer be available in the United States starting in early April 2024. So probably tomorrow. They're like, God, please, let's get to April. You can download your Facebook news data by visiting your Facebook information and your profile settings. So
that's what Brian Cates was talking about. Or Axios was talking about, excuse me. Is that your Facebook, we're going to get puppies and we're not going to get news, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And Kardashians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Okay, well, so there's lots of alternatives. I can lead you to them.
Yeah.
I can tell you where they are. If you want some help, I'll help you. Okay.
Wonderful.
Good
and we,
stuff.
And, we,
All right,
and,
well,
and again,
gonna...
and I've said this before, but we just need to start coming together on other platforms. And, you know, think about Facebook as a TV channel, right? You know, something happens crazy on Facebook or Twitter or X and you don't cancel it, you know. Same thing with if you don't like something that happened on MTV, you don't cancel it and go to VH1. You just change the channel.
Nope.
You know, you just go where the people are, where the information is. And so... You know, we already know they lost. They've already lost this. We have to be careful with what we do, but we have already started gathering in other places. So I'm really hopeful, I don't think that this is something that that can actually hurt us in the long run. And just the fact that we can see it coming and have been able to see it coming for years and being able to connect in other places is very hopeful. I'm very hopeful for the future.
I am too. And I'm telling you, it feels like the matrix is broken and it's going
to,
and it's never going to go back to us passively sitting in front of the television and absorbing the mainstream media garbage, which is not going to happen. And I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
Very happy about that.
Amen.
All right. I love you, and I'm going to go and feed the birds and feed myself, and I'll see you guys next week with more good news about hopefully the end, the death knell of the mainstream media. Okay?
Awesome. Okay. I love you, and I will talk to you next week. Well, I'll talk to you this week, but okay. Yes. Bye.
Bless you. Bye-bye.
Okay. So, I'm not sure, you know, it's Easter. I don't, you know, I don't put a whole lot of pressure on my co-hosts, to come in, especially on holidays. So if Ty comes, Ty comes. If not, we'll see him next week. I'm going to talk a little bit about, what Mom touched on earlier in the show about weather modification. And this is a, like I said, an NPR PBS interview from 2015. So, you know, I mean, I know that there were some quote-unquote wackadoodle nut jobs out there talking about this stuff way longer than I've been you know, that may have known about this stuff way before, did know about this stuff way before when I was still waking up. But this is, I love these kinds of things because it kind of gives you a historical sense of what they've been doing, what they've tried as far as weather modification. And like I said earlier, that the title of this is in 1915, San Diego hired a rainmaker and floods ensued. And I would, if anybody's listening out there, I'd love for some feedback on this after we're done. So here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Maybe when I was born, God whispered a special word in my ear. Maybe he said, Bill Starbuck, you ain't gonna have much in this world. You ain't gonna have no money, no fancy spurs, no white horse with a golden saddle. But Bill Starbuck, wherever you go, you'll bring rain. Maybe that's my one and only blessing.
Burt Lancaster, starring as the Rainmaker in the 1956 film of the same name. Did you know it was said to be inspired by a real-life rainmaker who came to San Diego in late 1915 during a terrible drought then? His name was Charles Hatfield, and some say he delivered on his promise to...
Hold on, sorry. I guess I have to keep this open while I do this.
Fill San Diego's empty reservoirs, but it was disastrous. We're visiting KPBS in San Diego, so we dropped by the San Diego Central Library, which has a terrific new display about Hatfield. We have a slideshow at herenow.org. And we asked Rick Crawford, supervisor of special projects, who was Charles Hatfield?
Hatfield was considered a rainmaker today, but his original profession was a sewing machine salesman. He came out here with his family in the late 1800s, and he began selling sewing machines as a profession. But he was fascinated for some reason, we don't know exactly why, but he was interested in rainmaking. He wasn't the only person that did this, the people around the country that were interested in doing this. And in California, you had a ready market for this because we've never had enough rain. We've never had enough rain in the right places. And so he was inspired to do that. He felt or convinced people that he had the methods, the means of creating rain. When clouds appeared, he could produce rain from those clouds.
Well, he was called the moisture accelerator, right?
That's what he called himself. That's the title he preferred.
And we're seeing all these pictures here. It looks like a young Charles Hatfield. Looks like he's experimenting with different chemicals in a lab over here. Did he actually use chemicals?
He did use chemicals. This is a posed picture that he created or had created, and we don't know exactly what chemicals he was using. And his technique usually would be he built a tower, a 20-foot tower in the area.
I'm seeing a picture here.
Yes, he would go up to the top of his tower, and he would burn these chemicals. Some witnesses claimed they saw people So I'm shooting chemicals into the air somehow, like bombs.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, there would be fumes, there would be smoke, there would be something that would ascend into the clouds and supposedly induce the rain to come down.
Well, take us to 1915 and this time in San Diego when he came to San Diego with the proposition that he bring rain to what? Is it a drought like, was it a drought like today?
It was very much like today. We were in our, I believe, our fourth year of drought, or appeared to be going into our fourth year of drought. And at that time, the population of San Diego was quite small, but all of our water had to be produced locally. We had no Colorado River water. We had no water from Northern California. So we had some dams. And so we relied on the rain to fill these reservoirs. That was our supply. In addition, there were some small wells in Mission Valley and different places, but without the reservoir water, we were in trouble. And the city council met with Charles Hatfield, and he offered to fill Lake Morena, which was our primary reservoir at the time, and he would do it for $10,000.
So there was no contract, we understand, but the city council said yes.
There was a vote 4-1 to accept this offer, no written contract at all. This is a verbal handshake deal. Hatfield believed he had a contract, a valid contract, and he went out there with his brother to do his job.
Built the tower, did whatever he does, and it rained.
It started raining on January 10th, and it pretty much didn't stop for the whole month. There were a day or two when it didn't rain, but we had two huge storms that lasted quite a while. We ended up with about 30 inches of rain in the backcountry, not that much downtown, but 30 inches of rain for San Diego County within a month is quite a bit of rain, and we were not prepared for it. So there was a great deal of flooding. One dam was destroyed. There was damage to others. A lot of property damage, a lot of death.
This was astonishing. Suddenly, I mean, the clouds opened up. How many people died?
We don't know exactly. The estimates range from 14 to 50. It wiped out a farming community near Tijuana. A little Andrews farming community was totally wiped away. Bridges were washed out, roads, railroad tracks, awful lot of destruction.
I think you have a picture down here, too, but talking about the fear when it was thought that the dam was going to go. Let's see. What was the dam?
We had Lake Morena was our primary supplier, and that's about 60 miles east of San Diego. And through conduits and pipelines, that flows downstream and then comes to San Diego. Well, it overflowed Morena, and it overflowed Lower Otay much further downstream and eventually blew out Lower Otay entirely.
I'm reading over here some, you've got posted accounts from the time, and here's something from Engineering News in 1916. At 5.05 p.m., the tension was so great that the steel diaphragm tore from the top of the center and the dam opened outward like a pair of gates, a huge wall of water.
Oh, my God.
Described variously as from 6 to 20 feet high, rushed down the valley, covering the distance from the dam site to Palm City about 10 miles in 48 minutes, carrying all before it.
And that break in the dam, that totally destroyed the dam. That was the biggest damage that we had. And that wiped out the farming communities in the Tijuana Valley and lower San Diego. We also had a lot of flooding in Mission Valley. For a time, we had no communication with outside of San Diego. You had to communicate with us by boat because the railroads were gone. The roads were all washed out.
Amazing. So when this happened, did everyone immediately think, oh, my God, it was him? I mean, is it assumed that he made it rain?
It's difficult to know what the common person thought about that. As I said, rainmakers were common. People did believe in this. And people might have regarded it just coincidental, but he had done his work. He certainly believed that he had produced the rain. And he went to city council after it was all over and demanded his money. They said, no, this is an act of God. He said, no, this is an act of Hatfield.
Well, and then they also said, well, if it's an act of Hatfield, then you have to pay us, what, something like $3 million in damages, which at the time...
Right. The estimate of damages was something like $3.5 million, and they offered to pay us $10,000 if he would pay us $3.5 million. That obviously didn't happen.
So eventually, in 1956, the movie's made, The Rainmaker, starring Burt Lancaster. But is that the Charles Hatfield story?
No, that's not the Charles Hatfield story. There is similarities, of course, the title primarily, but The Rainmaker in that story is in a different part of the country, different story entirely. But it was certainly inspired by what happened here in 1916.
So what is the legacy of Charles Hatfield? I mean, I've read that his seeding efforts, this shooting chemicals in the air, was part of the birth of modern-day cloud seeding, which is a legitimate enterprise. On the other hand, he could have been a complete lunatic who didn't know what he was doing and killed people, or it could have been a coincidence.
Well, he was interested in science. We have some of his books over here. He was interested in meteorology, so he had some rudimentary scientific knowledge about clouds. So what we call cloud seeding today may have been similar to what he was doing back then. Today we drop seeding from planes. We do it a different way. And it's hard to imagine what he was doing from a 20-foot tower was going to accomplish what he said it accomplished. We don't know if he believed he was doing it or whether he knew he was a huckster. You know, it's not something that we really know. One thing we do know is after the flood, in spite of all the damage, people outside of San Diego believe that he had been doing the job of producing the rain because he got a lot of jobs out of this. He worked in elsewhere and got a lot of contracts.
And what's the maybe lesson for today? Is cloud seeding something? We don't think we've even read about cloud seeding here in California in the current drought.
I don't think cloud seeding, as I understand it, really is going to accomplish too much more than producing rain from the clouds overhead. They're going to drop the rain here or elsewhere. If you cloud seed them, it may produce rain right there. Does that increase the overall supply of moisture on the ground? I don't think it does. I think that's been the problem over the years. Unless they can produce clouds of rain, it's not going to do much.
Rick, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Glad to have you.
Rick Crawford of San Diego Central Library, the place with the silver dome. We highly recommend the view up there. You can see pictures from their exhibit about Charles Hatfield at hereandnow.org. And, of course, you can rent the movie he supposedly inspired. Let's listen to another clip from The Rainmaker, starring Burt Lancaster as the man whose brothers had talents, and he finally found his.
I used to think, why am I blessed like Fred Arani? Why am I just a nothing man with nothing special to my name? And then one summer comes the drought. And Fred can't heal it away, and Arnie can't sing it away. But me, I go down to the holler. And I look up, and I say, please, rain. Please, please bring rain. And the rain came. And I knew. I knew I was one of the family.
Okay. I'm
support for WB. Oops,
nope. I'm really glad we got that on record. Okay. So I still no sign of Ty. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the second agreement. And then if Ty is with us after that, then we will we'll do his segment. If not, then we'll just end the show early. I'm not really married to the fact that we have to do this for three hours if nobody else is here. Okay. Give me 1 second. Just queuing this up. Okay. All right. So here we go. This is the second agreement. If you, three or four weeks ago, we did the first. So, but here we go. This is the second agreement. The first agreement is be impeccable with your word. Second is, oh gosh, what is the second agreement? They'll tell us in 1 second, I'm sure. Let's see.
The second agreement. Don't take anything personally.
Great one.
The second agreement is don't take anything personally. Whatever happens around you, don't take it personally. Using an earlier example, if I see you on the street and I say, hey, you are so stupid, without knowing you, it's not about you. It's about me. If you take it personally, then perhaps you believe you're stupid. Maybe you think to yourself, how does he know? Is he clairvoyant? Or can everybody see how stupid I am? You take it personally because you agree with whatever was said. As soon as you agree, the poison goes through you, and you are trapped in the dream of hell. What causes you to be trapped is what we call personal importance. Personal importance, or taking things personally, is the maximum expression of selfishness because we make the assumption that everything is about me. During the period of our education or our domestication, we learn to take everything personally. We think we are responsible for everything. Me, me, always me. Nothing other people do is because of you. It is because of themselves. All people live in their own dream, in their own mind. They are in a completely different world from the one we live in. When we take something personally, we make the assumption that they know what is in our world, and we try to impose our world on their world. Even when a situation seems so personal, even if others insult you directly, it has nothing to do with you. What they say, what they do, and the opinions they give are according to the agreements they have in their own minds. Their point of view comes from all the programming they received during domestication. If someone gives you an opinion and says, "Hey, you look so fat," don't take it personally. Because the truth is that this person is dealing with his or her own feelings, beliefs, and opinions. That person tried to send poison to you. And if you take it personally, then you take that poison and it becomes yours. Taking things personally makes you easy prey for these predators, the black magicians. They can hook you easily with one little opinion and feed you whatever poison they want, and because you take it personally, you eat it up. You eat all their emotional garbage, and now it becomes your garbage. But if you do not take things personally, you are immune in the middle of hell. Immunity to poison in the middle of hell is the gift of this agreement. When you take things personally, you feel offended, and your reaction is to defend your beliefs and create conflicts. You make something big out of something so little because you have the need to be right and make everybody else wrong. You also try hard to be right by giving them your own opinions. In the same way, whatever you feel and do is just a projection of your own personal dream, a reflection of your own agreements. What you say, what you do, what you think or feel, and the opinions you have are according to the agreements you have made. And these opinions have nothing to do with me. It is the way you see the world. It is nothing personal, because you are dealing with yourself, not with me. Others are going to have their own opinion according to their belief system. So nothing they think about me is really about me, but it is about them. You may even tell me, "Hey, what you're saying is hurting me." But it is not what I am saying that is hurting you. It is that you have wounds that I touch by what I have said. You are hurting yourself. There is no way that I can take this personally. Not because I don't believe in you or don't trust you, but because I know that you see the world with different eyes, with your eyes. You create an entire picture or movie in your mind, and in that picture, you are the director. You are the producer. You are the main actor or actress. Everyone else is a secondary actor or actress. It is your movie. The way you see that movie is according to the agreements you have made with life. Your point of view is something personal to you. It is no one's truth but yours. Then if you get mad at me, I know you are dealing with yourself. I am the excuse for you to get mad. And you get mad because you are afraid. Because you are dealing with fear. If you're not afraid, there is no way you will get mad at me or hate me. If you're not afraid, there's no way you'll be jealous or sad. If you live without fear, if you love, there is no place for any of those emotions. If you don't feel any of those emotions, it is logical that you will feel good. When you feel good, everything around you is good. When everything around you is great, everything makes you happy. You're loving everything that's around you because you're loving yourself. You're happy with the movie that you're producing, happy with your agreements with life. You're at peace, and you live in that state of bliss where everything is wonderful and everything is beautiful. In that state of bliss, you are making love all the time with everything that you perceive. Whatever people do, feel, think, or say, don't take it personally. If they tell you how wonderful you are, they're not saying that because of you. You know you're wonderful. It is not necessary to believe other people who tell you that you're wonderful. Don't take anything personally. Even if someone got a gun and shot you in the head, it was nothing personal. Even at that extreme. Even the opinions you have about yourself are not necessarily true. Therefore, you don't need to take whatever you hear in your own mind personally. The mind has the ability to talk to itself, but it also has the ability to hear information that is available from other realms. Sometimes you hear a voice in your mind and you may wonder where it came from. The mind lives in more than one dimension. There may be times when you have ideas that don't originate in your mind, but you're perceiving them with your mind. You have the right to believe or not believe these voices, and the right not to take what they say personally. You have a choice, just as you have a choice of what to believe and agree with in the dream of the planet. The mind can also talk and listen to itself. Part of the mind is speaking and the other part is listening. It is a big problem when so many parts of your mind are all speaking at the same time. Each one has different thoughts and feelings. Each one has a different point of view. The programming in the mind, all of those agreements we have made, are not necessarily compatible with each other. Every agreement is like a separate living being with its own personality. All these little living beings create inner conflict because they're alive and they each have a voice. There are conflicting agreements that go against other agreements, and on until it becomes a big war in the mind. The mitote is the reason humans hardly know what they want, how they want it, or when they want it. They don't agree with themselves because there are parts of the mind that want one thing and other parts that want exactly the opposite. Only by making an inventory of our agreements will we uncover all of the conflicts in the mind and eventually make order out of the chaos of the mitote. Don't take anything personally, because by taking things personally, you set yourself up to suffer for nothing. Humans are addicted to suffering at different levels and to different degrees, and we support each other in maintaining these addictions. Humans agree to help each other suffer. If you have the need to be abused, you'll find it easy to be abused by others. Likewise, if you're with people who need to suffer, something in you makes you abuse them. It is as if they have a note on their back that says, "Please kick me." They are asking for justification for their suffering. Their addiction to suffering is nothing but an agreement that is reinforced every day. Wherever you go, you will find people lying to you. And as your awareness grows, you'll notice that you also lie to yourself. Do not expect people to tell you the truth, because they also lie to themselves. You have to trust yourself and choose to believe or not to believe what someone says to you. When we really see other people as they are, without taking it personally, we can never be hurt by what they say or do. Even if others lie to you, it's okay. They're lying to you because they're afraid. They're afraid you will discover that they are not perfect. It is painful to take off that social mask. If others say one thing but do another, you're lying to yourself if you don't listen to their actions. But if you're truthful with yourself, you'll save yourself a lot of emotional pain. Telling yourself the truth about it may hurt, but you don't need to be attached to the pain. If someone is not treating you with love and respect, it is a gift if they walk away from you. If that person doesn't walk away, you will surely endure many years of suffering. Walking away may hurt for a while, but your heart will eventually heal. Then you can choose what you really want. You'll find that you don't need to trust others as much as you need to trust yourself to make the right choices. When you make it a strong habit not to take anything personally, you avoid many upsets in your life. Your anger, jealousy, and envy will disappear, and even your sadness will simply disappear if you don't take things personally. If you can make this second agreement a habit, you'll find nothing can put you back into hell. There is a huge amount of freedom that comes to you when you take nothing personally. You become immune to black magicians, and no spell can affect you, regardless of how strong it may be. The whole world can gossip about you, and if you don't take it personally, you are immune. Someone can intentionally send emotional poison, and if you don't take it personally, you will not eat it. When you don't take the emotional poison, it becomes even worse in the sender, but not in you. You can see how important this agreement is. Taking nothing personally helps you to break many habits and routines that trap you in the dream of hell and cause needless suffering. Just by practicing this second agreement, you begin to break dozens of teeny tiny agreements that cause you to suffer. And if you practice the first two agreements, you will break 75% of the teeny tiny agreements that keep you trapped in hell. Write this agreement on paper and put it on your refrigerator to remind you all the time. Don't take anything personally. As you make a habit of not taking anything personally, you won't need to place your trust in what others do or say. You will only need to trust yourself to make responsible choices. You are never responsible for the actions of others. You are only responsible for you. When you truly understand this and refuse to take things personally, you can hardly be hurt by the careless comments or actions of others. If you keep this agreement, you can travel around the world with your heart completely open and no one can hurt you. You can say, "I love you," without fear of being ridiculed or rejected. You can ask for what you need. You can say yes or you can say no, whatever you choose, without guilt or self-judgment. You can choose to follow your heart always. Then you can be in the middle of hell and still experience inner peace and happiness. You can stay in your state of bliss, and hell will not affect you at all.
Really, really powerful. And just a quick fun story. I'm going to play the third agreement because Ty is coming. But just a fun story. I took this literally, what he just said about, hang it on your refrigerator so you can always remember. After I had studied the four agreements and my mom, who you just heard in the first hour, had not studied it. The third agreement is don't make assumptions. And we'll play that in a second, but I put up the four agreements on the refrigerator and she goes, "Well, what is this supposed to mean? Is this directed at me?" And this was years and years ago. This is an older book. So this was years ago. So, of course, grace is a wonderful thing, but I still chuckle when I think about that, because this is so what the four agreements are about. And the next agreement is don't make assumptions. So here we go. 3, 2, 1.
The third agreement, don't make assumptions. The third agreement is don't make assumptions. We have the tendency to make assumptions about everything. The problem with making assumptions is that we believe they are the truth. We could swear they're real. We make assumptions about what others are doing or thinking. We take it personally. Then we blame them and react by sending emotional poison with our word. That is why whenever we make assumptions, we're asking for problems. We make an assumption, we misunderstand, we take it personally, and we end up creating a whole big drama for nothing. All the sadness and drama you have lived in your life was rooted in making assumptions and taking things personally. Take a moment to consider the truth of this statement. The whole world of control between humans is about making assumptions and taking things personally. Our whole dream of hell is based on that. We create a lot of emotional poison just by making assumptions and taking it personally, because usually we start gossiping about our assumptions. Remember, gossiping is the way we communicate to each other in the dream of hell and transfer poison to one another. Because we are afraid to ask for clarification, we make assumptions. and believe we are right about the assumptions. Then we defend our assumptions and try to make someone else wrong. It is always better to ask questions than to make an assumption, because assumptions set us up for suffering. The big mitote in the human mind creates a lot of chaos, which causes us to misinterpret everything. We only see what we want to see and hear what we want to hear. We don't perceive things the way they are. We have the habit of dreaming with no basis in reality. We literally dream things up in our imaginations. Because we don't understand something, we make an assumption about the meaning, and when the truth comes out, the bubble of our dream pops, and we find out it was not what we thought it was at all. An example. You're walking in the mall and you see a person you like. That person turns to you and smiles and then walks away. You can make a lot of assumptions because of this one experience, and even create a whole fantasy. And you really want to believe this fantasy and make it real. In your mind, a whole relationship begins from that. A whole dream begins to form just from your assumptions, and you think, oh, this person really likes me. Maybe you even get married in this fantasy land. But the fantasy is in your mind, in your personal dream. Making assumptions in our relationships is really asking for problems. Often we make the assumption that our partner knows what we think and that we don't have to say what we want. We assume they're going to do what we want because they know us so well. If they don't do what we assume they should do, we feel so hurt and say, you should have known. Another example. You decide to get married and you make the assumption that your partner sees marriage the same way that you do. Then you live together and you find out this is not true. This creates a lot of conflict, but you still don't try to clarify your feelings about marriage. The husband comes home from work and the wife is mad, and the husband doesn't know why. Maybe it's because the wife made an assumption. Without telling him what she wants, she makes an assumption that he knows her so well that he knows what she wants, as if he can read her mind. She gets so upset because he fails to meet her expectations. Making assumptions in relationships leads to a lot of difficulties, a lot of misunderstandings with people we supposedly love. Kind of relationship, we can make the assumption that others know what we think and we don't have to say what we want. They're going to do what we want because they know us so well. If they don't do what we want, what we assume they should do, we feel hurt and think, how could you do that? You should know. Again, we make the assumption that the other person knows what we want. A whole drama is created because we make this assumption and then put more assumptions on top of it. It is very interesting how the human mind works. We have the need to justify everything, to explain and understand everything in order to feel safe. We have millions of questions that need answers because there are so many things that the reasoning mind cannot explain. It is not important if the answer is correct. Just the answer itself makes us feel safe. This is why we make assumptions. If others tell us something, we make assumptions. And if they don't tell us something, we make assumptions to fulfill our need to know and to replace the need to communicate. Even if we hear something and we don't understand, we make assumptions about what it means and then believe the assumptions. We make all sorts of assumptions because we don't have the courage to ask questions. These assumptions are made so fast and unconsciously most of the time because we have agreements to communicate this way. We have agreed that it is not safe to ask questions. We have agreed that if people love us, they should know what we want or how we feel. When we believe something, we assume we are right about it to the point that we will destroy relationships in order to defend our position. We make the assumption that everyone sees life the way we do. We assume that others think the way we think, feel the way we feel, judge the way we judge, and abuse the way we abuse. This is the biggest assumption that humans make, and this is why we have a fear of being ourselves around others, because we think everyone else will judge us, victimize us, abuse us, and blame us as we do ourselves. So even before others have a chance to reject us, we have already rejected ourselves. That is the way the human mind works. We also make assumptions about ourselves, and this creates a lot of inner conflict. We overestimate or underestimate ourselves because we haven't taken the time to ask ourselves questions and to answer them. Perhaps you need to gather more facts about a particular situation, or maybe you need to stop lying to yourself about what you truly want. Often when you go into a relationship with someone you like, you have to justify why you like that person. You only see what you want to see, and you deny there are things you don't like about that person. Then you make assumptions, and one of the assumptions is, my love will change this person. But this is not true. Your love will not change anybody. If others change, it's because they want to change, not because you can change them. Real love is accepting other people the way they are, without trying to change them. If we try to change them, this means we don't really like them. Find someone whom you don't have to change at all. It is much easier to find someone who is already the way you want him or her to be, instead of trying to change that person. Also, that person must love you just the way you are, so he or she doesn't have to change you at all. If others feel they have to change you, that means they really don't love you just the way you are. So why be with someone if you're not the way he or she wants you to be? We have to be what we are, so we don't have to present a false image. Just imagine the day that you stop making assumptions with your partner, and eventually with everyone else in your life. The way you communicate will change completely, and your relationships will no longer suffer from conflicts created by mistaken assumptions. One way to keep yourself from making assumptions is to ask questions. Make sure the communication is clear. If you don't understand, ask. Have the courage to ask questions until you are clear as you can be. And even then, do not assume you know all there is to know about a given situation. Once you hear the answer, you will not have to make assumptions because you will know the truth. Also, find your voice to ask for what you want. Everybody has the right to tell you no or yes, but you always have the right to ask. Likewise, everybody has the right to ask you, and you have the right to say yes or no. If you don't understand something, it is better for you to ask and be clear instead of making an assumption. The day you stop making assumptions, you will communicate cleanly and clearly, free of emotional poison. Without making assumptions, your word becomes impeccable. With clear communication, all of your relationships will change, not only with your partner, but with everyone else. You won't need to make assumptions because everything will become clear. This is what I want. This is what you want. If we communicate in this way, our word becomes impeccable. If all humans could communicate with impeccability of the word, there would be no wars, no violence, no misunderstandings. All human problems would be resolved if we could just have good, clear communication. This, then, is the third agreement. Don't make assumptions. Just saying this sounds easy, but it is difficult to do. It is difficult because we so often do exactly the opposite. We have all these habits and routines that we are not even aware of. Becoming aware of these habits and understanding the importance of this agreement is the first step. But understanding its importance is not enough. Information or an idea is merely the seed in your mind. What will really make the difference is action. Taking the action over and over again strengthens your will, nurtures the seed, and establishes a solid foundation for the new habit to grow. After many repetitions, These new agreements will become second nature, and you will see how the magic of your word transforms you from a black magician into a white magician. A white magician uses the word for creation, giving, sharing, and loving. By making this one agreement a habit, your whole life will be completely transformed. When you transform your whole dream, magic just happens in your life. What you need comes to you easily because spirit moves freely through you. This is the mastery of intent, the mastery of love and gratitude, and the mastery of life. This is the goal of the Toltec. This is the path to personal freedom.
Okay, that's amazing. Ty's with us. Happy Resurrection Day. I think Sabrina is
here. I'm here, sorry. Let me in.
No, I just unmuted you. I think Sabrina's here too. Sabrina,
yay,
just press one. Unless you just want to listen. But happy Resurrection Day to everyone. I love everybody who's here and everybody
yeah,
who's not.
Woo.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like it calling it Easter. It has kind of like pagan connotations. So I like to call it Resurrection Day. Yeah. I think that's Sabrina.
She there?
Go ahead.
I got
go
weird
ahead,
reception
Ty.
Here too. So I just have weird
no,
reception
think...
here too. So I'm just checking.
I hear you.
I had a funny joke that I made for Easter too. I don't know. It's like a just and this too because it's like you need clear communication. What? Clear communication. I've never been to communion. Oh my God.
Yeah. Perfect. Yes, absolutely. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah,
all
glad
right
to be here.
So go ahead and set up your topic for the last bit of the show.
Yes. If I don't know if you guys, I sent a Word doc out. It's called September Plaid Recession. It's a huge legal document that has just all the foundations of the stuff we talk about. But it's just like people are like, where do we find that stuff? Like, where do we get all that? Where's that information? So we've made this like document, this Word document that you can all add to, in which you can see all like the different laws and how status works, and they update it all the time. So it's been like a 10-year-long document process. So yeah, it's part of like the not making assumptions things. Like people just don't know, and so it's like ask. I mean, if you ask, then you know what I mean. But if you don't ask, it's not going to come to you. That's how
right,
the law of I mean, things aren't just provided. That's just not how our society works. So, yeah, that's like the basis foundation of it. It's like, yeah, I love that. That's why it's the second agreement, I think, is don't make assumptions, because it's just – because we assume a lot. You know, we assume people's experiences. We assume that because they agree on one topic that they agree on all topics. They don't.
Right.
You know, that's the whole dynamic.
It's actually don't make assumptions is a third agreement. And I always get those confused. It's second
yeah,
is don't take anything personally, and
personally,
third,
yeah, that's what it is.
Yep, is don't make assumptions, which are equally
yeah,
important. And oh gosh, I should contact Sabrina because she just needs to press one so I can let her in. I'm pretty sure that's her. Like I said,
yeah,
they don't allow us to see. It's just phone numbers, and I haven't memorized a phone number since 1996. So
I was gonna say it's probably the last time we had to do it was 2001 before they.
Yeah. Right. You know. Exactly. So
this,
I'm just
this
gonna,
is before we had area codes, everyone. This is pre-area codes, everyone. Just so you understand. So.
Yay! There's Sabrina. Hi, Sabrina.
Hello.
Happy
yay,
Resurrection Day.
So,
good times.
You guys are talking about the four agreements. I don't know them by heart. They are amazing.
Yeah, we just did the first, the first one we did weeks ago, and then we've been so busy with other news. But I just did the second and third since it's light today. You know, it's Easter. I really don't expect people to be here. So thank you so much for being here. So I did the second and third agreement, which are don't take anything personally and don't make assumptions. So which
yep,
are so important. But yeah, we just finished that. But I'll let you guys take the floor on this, however you want to handle it. I'm kind of just here to learn, honestly. I know the basics, but I think you guys have a much better grasp on this topic than I do. So, Ty, Sabrina, take it away.
Let's let Sabrina say what she needs to say for. I mean, because yeah, I'm just. I explained the basics that we've been organizing this for I don't even know how many years, but yeah, we created a whole document series. It's just like it's filled with a whole bunch of stuff that just basics that people need to know about stuff and how they can add to it and all that. So I don't know what you want to add to that before we.
I'm going to put that link in the chat in the Freedomizer chat.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And that's the viewer link. So they would have to let us know if they wanted to edit it. They could be added, but the link that I shared with you earlier is the viewer link. Now, your email is on it, though, Ty. And so you can access the document and change how it's shared. But that link will only allow them to look at it. So.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you'll be surprised. I don't even know how much is on there. There's a lot on there, though, guys. There's a lot. It's pretty detail-oriented, so.
Well, I took things from all over. I mostly took what Ty provided and tried to put some organization to that. And then I added pieces from Lily Kincaid and Russell J. Gould and Peggy Hall on YouTube. She's
Peggy Hall.
Mm-hmm. Peggy Hall,
okay. Mm-hmm. And I've added just pieces as I come across them, you know, plugging them away. And it would be amazing if other people were to add to it. That's kind of the point, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've been talking recently about like adding people like Barbara O'Neill's work to it and, you know, Dr. Mm-hmm. Sebi mm-hmm. and just like things like that. Things we can add that people can just go, oh, I see. I can see how this links together. Because everything links together, as we all talk about. These are not separate topics. These are all the same overarching topic of food, news, and health. So.
And what I was thinking is anytime that you do a show or you're thinking about it, if you just jotted down a little note, you can even just take a picture of it. No, we're not playing in here. My puppy wants to play with her squeaky toy. Out.
Uh-huh.
Go. She's adorable, but she's very noisy. If you wanted to just even take a snapshot and send it to me, then when I have time, I'll go and look up those pieces or take the links you've given me and add it in. So that it keeps going. You don't have to spend a lot of time on it and neither do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and this is what we've been doing for a long time, Danielle. Like, me and her have been doing this for, it's just like teamwork stuff where like I would find random stuff and be like, Sabrina, look at this. Look at this right now. This is so helpful. Because if I can track it down, and then, so this is a teamwork effort. Like, everybody has a function. This is what we always tell people. You don't have to feel disempowered. Everybody has something, a niche that they can contribute to this, and we can all work together. You can teach people your own specialties and then be like, oh, I see. That's how I can apply that to my life. I mean, because everybody has those. It's removing that third-party cabal system away from that dynamic. That's what it is.
It really is, and that's kind of the point of collectively rewilding, more towards the natural world. But really anything can be there, taking back the ability to share individual thoughts of whether you want to call them guides, educators, instructors, teachers. You know, they take these titles. You were talking about it yesterday during your live and academia being so exclusionary and so full of themselves and all of these things. So we've taken and given those words away. We don't have those words anymore. If you don't have their papers, you don't qualify for those words. But Mighty Network kind of took that back, and they put it into the every person's hands to create these instructional types of communities, if that's the way they wanted to approach it. And every person approaching healing the land is going to have a different perspective. And really, we don't know what the right perspectives are. We don't have a manual to fix what we've broken. So nobody should tell anybody else that isn't just going out and dumping toxins out there. That's obviously not the point, but that's trying to do things to correct a problem. I don't think that anybody should tell anybody else, oh, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
And that's part of it too.
You have a degree. Are you a doctor? You know, like that's really like, you know, this stopper that we've had put on society, that if you don't have the right piece of paper behind your name or the right letters behind your name, then you're completely invalid and everything that, that you see and experience is just wrong.
Or completely ignored. Doesn't even take the time to tell you that you're wrong. It's just physically and mentally brushed off in the space. There'll actually be a hand gesture that they'll use to brush it away.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Wave you off.
And we would also be very clear. There were like, there's a lot of people. I mean, I did lose an older friend because he thought that I, because of the way that I speak to people or the way that I do this, that I somehow didn't value or trust the expertise of academics. I'm like, that's not it at all. They just can't be the gatekeepers of information. That's a very distinct difference.
Exactly.
So we do trust academics. We do trust them. But not all academics agree with each other. That's not, I mean, they're not a monolith.
Well,
you know what I mean? That's not how that works.
And I think it's worth saying, though, that if you don't believe the narrative that is mainstream and you are an expert, you're, you know, like waved off the same way that people that aren't experts are waved off, right?
Yeah. You know what they call those people? What do they call those people? Whistleblowers. So like there are people that don't know the subject that are dismissing the people that work in those fields. I'm like, no, they work in those fields. You can't just walk. You can't just wave away Sibel Edmonds. You can't do that. She worked there. You didn't work there. You can't tell her what her experience is. You can't do that. It's rude. So.
Well, it's more than rude. It's Machiavellian, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole point, really.
There it is. Yep.
That's exactly right. It's an attempt to keep things monolithic and I'm like, that's a narrative. Like, I mean, that's how cults work. People really think cult only means like religious conservative reactionary people. I'm like, no, you'd be surprised. Cults are actually started accidentally. NXIVM, as we all know, as we studied, me and Danielle covered for years, NXIVM is a cult that started on accident. These people didn't mean to join that at all. They had no intention of doing that. It just happens after years of time, you know? So they prey on weak people or people that are isolated or people that are looking for a specific thing, and they promise that thing. It's very Machiavellian. It's exactly what that is. So.
Well, but they removed that thing to begin with. They removed community. They removed connection to nature. All of these, they removed our ability to have our own skills at hand, to know how to make a basic shoe, to put together at least leather clothing, find your own food. Make your own bread, you know? Oh, my goodness.
I totally agree.
I'm trying to be outside, and there's so much going on.
I do dog walking and boarding for a living, so that certainly doesn't bother me, but...
There we go. That should be a lot better. I wasn't expecting this, and then everybody just converged on me. I apologize.
Don't worry about it. It's Easter. I mean, it's Resurrection Day.
And it was funny when you were talking about that. The whole thing is that they changed the date to fit Eoster or Ostara, depending on how it's pronounced.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The fertility festival, yeah.
Yes.
The lapwing bird, right? They have eggs at this time period. And then the gray hare. Those are her animals. So.
Yep.
Yeah, so somebody just I'm going to interrupt really quick, but somebody said... why do Christians celebrate Jesus dying on a cross by hunting eggs? Right. And I said,
well,
it has to do with Constantine, pagan. It has to do with Constantine, pagans, and the Council of Nicaea. And you know, of course that's the right answer. Like there's completely pagan rituals that are put into our Christian holidays. And that's how it's been since the beginning. So I don't want to get sidetracked. I'm going to let you guys talk. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, no, and it's also part of this because it's a cross of also the new marketing. Because I mean, all the holidays are commercial holidays. They're commercial. They're not, they have nothing to do with the original intent of anything, including St. Patrick. People were wondering what St. Patrick's Day was. They're like, oh, that's an American holiday. Actually, it's an American Irish holiday. So Ireland finally adopted it, but it's not an Irish holiday. It's an American Irish holiday that Ireland now adopted because of its popularity. So things morph over time. That's just how that works. So,
well, Cinco de Mayo is the same thing, right?
That is exactly it. Yes. Well, so is Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is an American African holiday. It's not an African holiday at all. So, and I do Kwanzaa, by the way. I do Kwanzaa. I occasionally do Kwanzaa every once in a while. So.
Well, I was just thinking it's not my place to say, but I feel like there's nothing for people that have been ripped so violently from their heritage. And I've always respected that it was just a need for a holiday for people that didn't feel they were included in museums. I mean,
indeed,
that's how I
feel. Indeed. And they say we're a melting pot until we have to be one, and then people don't want to do that anymore. So, and that's true on all sides, by the way. That's true with, I mean, because, I mean, even the woke left right now is like, well, we don't want to incorporate people that are not woke left. I'm like, well, that's the opposite of the thing you just said you were supporting. So that means everyone, not just the people you like. It means everybody. So.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's why this conversation is so important, because right now, like, up is down, left is right, you know, black is white. And I really do think that if we can...
Slavery is freedom. Slavery is freedom,
exactly.
George Orwell. All right.
Right. Yep. And if we can get some kind of grasp on our language, on our laws, on our words. I think language is the most important part of it. I think that more people will understand where we are and what we're up against.
Yeah,
I think that
most of the time they say it's self-deception. It's very hard to deceive others, but it's very easy to deceive yourself. Very easy.
Well, it's very easy to deceive the masses. That's the easiest thing of all. You know, if you make a bright show, you can deceive the masses. At least since the Roman Colosseum, that's been a modus operandi for You know,
I was just about to say breads and circuses, but I'm sorry. I'm interrupting.
Or Chicago, the Chicago musical. Give them the old razzle dazzle, razzle dazzle them. That's it. That's it right there. You get out of crimes, you can get out of anything, as long as you repeat a lie often enough and people believe it. So.
Well, and if you make it attractive, right? That's.
Yeah, that's Huxley. Huxley is desire, Orwell is fear.
It's similar to what they do to our food, where they pump it full of fats and sugars and salts so that your body craves it because it has a taste, but it's not giving you anything you need. So you just keep stuffing that stuff in your face and you're never really satisfied.
Yeah. And then you get bigger and people are like, why are you getting bigger? Because you're inflamed. That's inflammatory. It's a poison. That's what that is. It's literally that. It's cutting off the circulation to your other parts. That's what it's doing. So... that's why fasting is so important. People don't get how fasting works. Like, if you're ridding yourself of toxins, you'll become intolerant to them after a while. If you stop, there's a lot of people that I know that go to Europe and they eat there, and then they come back and they're like, "We can't eat this food anymore. We can't eat it." It's because Europe is appalled by what we're eating. They're like, "What are you doing? What's happening right now?" I don't understand.
Well, it's illegal.
Yeah, our food's kind of illegal there.
It is. It should be. It's not food. It's not food. They just call it food. It's not food at all. So,
that's really what you want to learn about the government language, though. It's all back talk. It's all side speak, right?
Natural, green.
Yeah. Well, the Green Deal, right? The new
green
deal is the exact opposite.
If they say the word green, you're on it. You're on it. The moment they say green, we're like, we got you, honey. We got you.
So just like a quick side note on the food. My husband was feeling a bit uncomfortable. And so he decided to do this intermittent fasting diet, right? Right after that, there's news stories that come up that say that intermittent fasting causes strokes and heart attacks and all of these things. But in the last month and a half, he's lost 20 pounds just by getting intermittent.
Yeah, I bet really quickly, too. Yeah.
Very quickly. And he feels so much better. And, you know, now he's eating once a day, you know, and people are like, you have to eat five times a day. That's what the FDA says we have to do, right? And he's like, can't really. Yep. Yep.
Really what it comes down to is that you have to learn your own body. For some people, it is better to eat five small meals. For some people, it's better to eat one really large meal. And there are cultures that, my cousin is always talking about this culture that only basically subsists on the cattle that they raise, their blood and organ meat, their regular meat, all of that. They don't eat almost anything else. And they're one of the healthiest cultures on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But they also went and tried to eat
that
diet and didn't become accustomed to it over generations. It wouldn't do them any good, you know?
Indeed. And it depends on where you're located, too. I mean, we have a lot of first-world issues where we're like, I'm not against veganism, but I want them to understand that that is a first-world problem. People in Siberia can't eat kale. And they're not immoral for eating whatever's around for them to survive. That's just not how nature works. Animals eat each other while they're still alive. I don't know what you're talking – and there's carnivorous plants, so then what are you talking about? Like, that doesn't make any sense. That's just irrational. That's intellectualism of your food. You're making food an ideology. You're making food a religion. That's what that is. So,
although on that note, I heard the Venus flytrap could actually just survive with the nutrients in the soil, but every day they wake up and choose violence.
Well, mind you, they're only one out of 150 species of carnivorous plants. It's not, they're not the only ones. There's plenty of carnivorous species of plants. They eat mice and spiders and birds and shit. So, like, I mean, that's how nature is. People like nature as being this sort of, like, passive. Nature is not passive at all. Nature is the creator and the destroyer simultaneously. That's how you know it's neutral.
Absolutely.
That's why.
Yeah, that's why vegans are like, we need to respect nature. And then, you know, you see a lot of really nasty shit in nature.
I was like, nature doesn't even respect nature. Are you saying that Native Americans are immoral for eating meat during the winter in Midwest? You're not going to say that. How dare you? Who are you talking to? That is so rude. I will tolerate it. I just won't. So it's people that are assuming they intellectualize it. They don't have to live that experience. They're intellectualizing it from a postmodernism viewpoint where they're already satisfied and secure. That's not how that works. So
I want you to think about something. The word natural, we misuse it. Like, we misuse so many words. We, as a being, no matter if we were manipulated, not manipulated, any of these things, are natural. And we cannot take anything from anywhere other than nature. So our outcomes are not unnatural. Now, we can say that we've, you know, processed them or chemicalized them, things like this, but that is still a natural element that has been manipulated by a natural creature. So it's an egotism thing. We make ourselves like we're more than nature, outside of nature, better than nature. Because the word nasty towards nature, again, that is, when you said that, I can't remember your exact words, Ty, but you said it's all about the language, and that's it. We've turned natural into nasty in our minds, in our language, things like that. If you want to call anything unnatural, it would be our perspective.
Yeah, there you go. You nailed it. You nailed it. Well, that's one of my favorite George Carlin bits, is that he's like, what if plastic is natural? Because it's coming from the earth. We designed it. Just because we manipulate it doesn't mean it's not. What if the earth's only problem was that it wanted to make plastic and get rid of humans? Like, that's a great perspective. Just to think about. Just to think about it like that. I'm like, we're alchemists. That's what they believe alchemy is. You can turn anything into anything else. That is the gifts that humans have. We have the ability to turn chaos into order. We have the ability to do any of those things. It's either we don't know or we do know and we choose not to. It's one or the other. So,
or we were manipulated by an outside force at some point
That's why the difference between ignorance and wickedness is so, it's nuanced, but it's there distinctly. Because the people that pretend not to know are people that specifically do know. They're like, how could they do this? How could they not? Oh, well, they were ignorant because they know the populace will forgive ignorance. What the populace will not forgive is wickedness, and they know that. So they have to feign ignorance, even though people in positions of power wouldn't have gotten there through ignorance. They didn't fall upwards. That's not a thing. They got there through being deceitful. That's exactly what it is. So, these are actors. These are actors. People disacknowledge acting. They just acknowledge, if you guys saw this quote recently that Deborah Messing did, where she was like, I'm not a liar. You can't, I'm just not a liar. I'm like, sweetie, Deborah Messing, you have a master's in acting. You are a professional liar. I'm not sure who you're lying to, but it's not us. Who is? Some of us understand what that is. That's what that is. Politicians are actors. They're actors that were too ugly to make it in Hollywood. That's just my perspective, but.
I'm not going to make any assumptions or take anything personally because I read the four agreements, but as somebody who ran for Congress, I'm kidding.
Who's endorsed by an actual person of actual morality called Cynthia McKinney. We love you. Shout out to Cynthia McKinney, sweetheart, all day.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly
right. All day long, sweetheart.
Yes. Okay, here we go. Do you guys have any clips that need to be played, or do you just got you want to just go off this list?
Yeah, this is the list. Might as well. Fuck it.
All right, cool. All right. Stepping away for 30 seconds. Go ahead, you guys.
What's on the list? What are you playing?
I don't know. Are we having a clip or are we talking?
No, we're just talking. No. I was talking about the list that you guys sent. But yeah, you know what? This is kind of your time. So you guys talk about what you want to talk about.
What was one of the first things I sent you? I don't even remember. I remember sending – this is back in the day, everyone, when YouTube was kind of not as destroyed as it was. Like, I mean, I remember, I don't think you, Sabrina, and like me and several other people, we were able to find anything online. You really could find it. It was right there. There was no filter at all. You could just look up anything you wanted and just watch for hours and hours and hours. And be, oh, I see. Because they didn't think we were going to study it that way. They thought we were just going to use it for fun little Vine videos and, you know, nonsense. And there are people posting real information all day everywhere. It's all over the place. And all I had to do was just show people where it was, and then we organized it, and there it is. I mean, this is what the CIA calls crowdsourcing. We're crowdsourcing. It's just they don't like it when we're doing it because we're apparently more efficient than them. That seems to be the issue here. So I want you all to also start taking that idea upon yourselves. It's really important. I mean, because the people who come to me for information, I'm like, you know, you all have the same capability in the same search browser I do. I don't have to go on the dark web or anything. I just use what you have to the best of your ability. That really is it. That's the key. None of us are special. We don't have like some sort of, you know what I mean? We don't have special access to people. We just care, and we want, and we are curious. My favorite quote from John Cleese is, "In curiosity is the strangest and most deceitful of the human experiences." I don't know how people are not curious about anything. How are you not? You want to know how this is made or where this came from or who? Like I'm just so curious all the time. I mean, sometimes it kills you. Curiosity kills the cat, but there's a reason why you should be. There's a reason why you should. That's where inspiration and ideas come from. And we're in the sign of Aries right now, which is all about that. Oh, by the way, we just entered Sagittarius Moon. We've been in Sagittarius Moon all weekend. Sagittarius is calling the things out. Scorpio was investigations. Sagittarius is calling out the thing that you saw, the thing that you said, your repressed feelings. So if you're feeling kind of aggressive and angry and those things you haven't spoken, this is the time to do it because Sagittarius is ruled by Jupiter, which is law, order, and justice. So, I mean, people are calling it out. They're like, we need to say the thing. It's time to say it. You know what I mean? It's time to say the thing. So, because Aquarius is making you do this. There's no secrets kept. You got to do it. You got to do it now. Because then you can set the tone for the next 12 months if you start now and then work steadily for 12 months. So,
absolutely, I'm totally changing the tone of what I'm doing. I don't know that I have any anger right now, really, other than just the average frustration that, again, people aren't curious about even what's wrong with their daily lives. But
yeah.
Changing the focus with collectively rewilding from the overall natural and agricultural world to just beekeeping. So it's this huge shift, and it's very overwhelming. I don't know if that fits in with any of that.
No, it is. No, that's it. Well, because, I mean, because also we still have things, because everything's in trine, so it's not just the one thing. There's also Taurus and all that, which rules the back and the body and the bones, so people are revealing their hospitalizations, or the people are coming to terms with and speaking about their emotional trauma, their head trauma, their sexual trauma. I've heard a lot of people message me, here's what actually happened to me. Well, I didn't know that happened. Well, this is the time for that. People are starting to kind of speak up again. And we
That's
need
really
that.
Good.
We need those experiences in the collective so that people don't have, as we say, so we don't make assumptions that somebody's experience is everybody else's experience, because it isn't.
Yeah.
Everybody has a very unique perspective to provide, and it's important that we listen to those voices. It's just very important.
Absolutely.
I was surprised. I always get surprised when I look up astrology, certain things, certain moons and trines with Lilith and all that, and then certain people do that thing. They do that. People coming back from the past. People going, oh, I got in a car accident, or people doing this. And I was like, they're like, oh, you said the thing, and then the thing happened. I'm like, no, I didn't say it. I was reading the cosmos. The cosmos tells you this is a cyclical cycle, just as you said, Easter, all these things. These are cyclical, constellational, cosmic laws that come back all the time. The eclipses do. Everything does. It's just people are trained not to pay attention to them. They're made to think that astrology is a belief, and it's not. It's a language. It's a language.
Or even worse, it's the devil.
Yeah. There's that part, too, where everything's Satan. Everything is Satan. Everything is. Because remember, I was ostracized too by people on the, even though I joined kind of a, I want to say, right wing mentality ish. That people were like, "Well, you're a man in a dress." So I'm like, "I understand that, but I don't do anything with children. I like to wear that." Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. Well, I mean, people who took costume history know that dress changes over time. And so it's not simply a matter of a man being in a dress. It's about why they're doing it. Are they doing it because they need to get somewhere, or are they doing it because they like doing it? As you've seen, I'm not popular. I'm not in Hollywood. I don't have to do it. I just enjoy doing it and like it. So that's it. That's what it is. So, but I'm not confused about my gender. I don't need to make people accept me for what I'm doing. I don't care. I live and let live. I would actually prefer if people didn't like me, actually, because then there's the people that are like, "I want to follow you because you're my guidance counselor now." I'm like, "You need to raise your standards. I don't know what's going on here, but I'm not leading you anywhere. Lead yourself. You're autonomous. Lead yourself." So.
Well, but like, I think we've touched on this a lot with like the Thanos mentality, where we need a savior. We need somebody to guide us. And
to guide us.
Right. And today on Resurrection Day, I think it's really important to know that Jesus was a teacher. He was not a God as far as I'm concerned.
He didn't want to be perceived as that either. He never said form a cult and follow me. He never said anything.
No.
He told you to be as him, to act as he does. You can all get the same stuff you did, but people don't want to they don't want to do that. That's why we need to cover the seven holy virtues, because he embodied the seven holy virtues. But those are way harder to do than the seven holy sins, aren't they? They're very difficult to maintain in a long-term setting. They're very difficult.
Well, you brought that up yesterday, and I couldn't tell you what they are. I've never – I mean, maybe I've heard the term seven holy virtues.
Yeah, you know how hard it is? I think I know three people other than myself that know all seven and can just list them off. I mean, I just study them, and I still forget them even to this moment. Like, it's difficult because we're not trained to. We're trained in – everybody knows the seven deadly sins. They can list them right now, every single person.
Right,
but when you say seven holy virtues, they're like, "What's that? What's that mean?
Yeah,
who? Is it a rapper?"
We're controlled by sin, and we're set free by virtue, you know, and that's really what – it was going on. So I've got one. I don't know how good this is, but I can play. It's only like almost 5 minutes. Do you want me to play this clip or just for a refresh?
What is it?
Seven heavenly virtues.
Oh, please do it. Please do it right now.
Yep. All right.
You have to do it.
Yeah. 3, 2, 1.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Mythology Explained. In today's video, we are going to discuss the seven heavenly virtues.
How's that volume?
Good.
Good.
What virtues constituted the seven heavenly virtues changed over time. So we are going to begin with the first iteration and continue on through to the version that's still predominant today in Christianity. Let's get into it. The seven heavenly virtues can be broken down into two groups. The four cardinal virtues, which are rooted in ancient philosophy and come from man, and the three theological virtues, which are rooted in religion and come from God. The dividing line between these two groups is the boundary between mortality and divinity. The four cardinal virtues, temperance, justice, prudence, and fortitude, are innate to humanity. On the other hand, the three theological virtues, faith, hope, and love, love being the greatest of the three, are not accessible to humanity by themselves, requiring the assistance of God. Pertaining to Christianity, the four cardinal virtues were grouped together by Ambrose, a theologian, and were subsequently adopted by the Church. These four virtues stem from a much older philosophical tradition that can be traced back to ancient Greece, beginning to coalesce in the pre-Socratic era, then becoming more concrete through the works of Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle. The three theological virtues, by contrast, are enshrined in Scripture, named by Paul the Apostle in Corinthians 13. So faith, hope, and love remain, but the greatest of these is love. Prudentius, a 5th century writer, wrote a poem called Psychomachia. In this work, the seven virtues are personified as seven women, and the seven vices are personified as seven women. And this story is basically about virtue overcoming vice. Each virtuous personification overcoming the countervailing personification of vice. Faith overcomes the worship of false gods. Chastity cuts down lust. Patience vanquishes wrath. Humility buries pride in a pit. Sobriety counteracts indulgence and invigorates the other virtues. Good works throttles greed, and Concordia dominates Discordia, pinning her tongue down with a spear and halting her breath. You probably noticed that the seven virtues and the seven vices delineated in Psychomachia don't match up with the four cardinal virtues and three heavenly virtues discussed earlier. The reason for this is that Prudentius exercised a healthy amount of creative license, eschewing the traditional list in lieu of his own rendition. And while not accurate in a theological sense, Psychomachia was a seminal work that popularized the concept of the heavenly virtues with medieval writers. It catapulted the dichotomy of virtue and vice into the collective consciousness of the time, giving it unprecedented prominence, adding to the zeitgeist of that era. About 100 years later, in 590 AD, Pope Gregory I revised the seven deadly sins, changing the list, which necessitated the updating of the seven heavenly virtues because the heavenly virtues and the deadly sins are diametrically opposed, meaning that when a new set of deadly sins was conceived of and ratified, the virtues had to change so that they continued to exist antithetically in relation to their sinful counterparts. Today, they are chastity, temperance, charity, diligence, patience, kindness, and humility. Chastity involves purity and self-control, particularly in matters of sexuality and relationships. Temperance involves moderation and self-restraint, particularly in relation to food, drink, and other pleasures. Charity involves the giving of oneself to others, particularly in terms of compassion, kindness, and generosity. Diligence involves a strong work ethic and a commitment to excellence in all aspects of one's life. Patience involves the ability to endure difficult or challenging situations with grace and composure. Kindness involves treating others with compassion, empathy, and understanding. Humility involves recognizing one's own limitations and weaknesses and having a modest and respectful attitude towards others. And that's it for this video.
Hey, everyone.
That's it right there, honey. Did you get all those? Everyone mark that down. Do you understand me? Here's the thing with natural law principles. Nothing can exist without its antithesis. Nothing. Everything is an antithesis. Every poison. I know you guys were hearing me talk about poison yesterday on my cast and how it's a multi-billion-dollar industry that is bigger than guns and children combined. Everything has an antithesis where it couldn't exist by definition. How would you be able to compare it to anything else unless it had an antithesis? Sound can cure cancer. There's a lot of things that exist. Just as all their weapons can cause that, there's an antithesis to their weapons. They just don't want you to know that. They want to seem like they're all-powerful. They're not. They will never have complete control. That will never, ever, ever happen. That's the motivation you need. If you need a motivation, know that they are fighting against the principles of natural law. It is a losing battle from the beginning. From the beginning, period, end of discussion.
So, we read the end of the book. That's why I quit. I think that's why I quit fighting and started with a new solution. My own solution.
Yeah.
Came from other people's ideas, and then they kind of abandoned it. So I'm like, no, I'm going to run with this. We don't need to worry about their machinations as much as we do. I'm not saying it's not worthy, because we need those people that do that too. And I absolutely recognize that. There are those who are called to each, just like what you were talking about with our skill set earlier. And for me, it isn't about what they're doing. We need a different way to do things. And
yep.
I'm not, it's my way. I'm trying to provide a forum for everybody to share what they think is the way to
mm-hmm.
go about doing
mm-hmm.
it, so that we can come together and by our own following or not following someone's idea, we create a more cohesive outcome together.
Yep.
No one
yep.
being in charge of anyone else.
Yes, and as important in, even in law, as we stated, we contract separately from them. That's what they're worried about. They are not worried about your revolution, even though women will be leading the charge, whether men like that or not, whether men accept this or not. I've had several talks with them. They don't like this reality. Too bad. Women will be leading the charge. Get over it. Next. we need to understand the balance.
Sure. Yeah. No. You're right. You are right. But for everyone who believes that there is, this all of the other virtues that we have, I think, is intended to cure all people, not just women.
Yep.
And
everyone. That's what it is. That's the reality of it. They don't get it. They don't understand. Because,
yeah.
I mean, it's so hard for them to process that there's an opposite to a thing. Because they're like, the other thing is so predominant. It's so hyper-focused and sensationalized. They don't see that, like, as we say all the time, like, well, there's no good news. No, it's just not being highlighted. It's just not being reported on. There's good news every day, all day long.
Yes. Yep. And that's why I dedicate, you know, an hour a week of this show to just good news. Mom's not exactly killing it. She has, I think, a little bit more of everything is stupid than good news.
Who can blame her? You know, we all have to have those moments, right?
Yes.
Well,
so
and she's a different, as we call, because it's a team effort. I mean, remember, the Kabbalah is a team effort. They have lower people, not lower, but people with different functions. That is her function. The
yeah.
things we need to hear, and we orator and translate how that can work in the sphere. There is different spheres of influence and different spheres of perspective in which we can culminate as a, but remember, we're not contracting with anybody outside of our people. And that's why they don't like us. That's why they're trying to stop us, because we're not using it and we're not using them. Because Protocols of Zion says for everywhere we turn, we go to them, and we're not turning to them. And that makes it, that creates a narcissistic injury.
Yeah.
They need to
I think
be
it's
less
really
irrelevant.
Interesting, though.
That is the downside to dictators.
Have you studied
where you
network
are right now? Because honestly, Ty, when you get animated, when you get like energized,
yeah.
you start we're not new to this rodeo. When you're saying like good, solid truths, you just need to lower your heart rate a little bit, you know, because
yeah,
I know.
They could feel it. Like, anyway, but so.
Too powerful, darling, too powerful.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for you to just repeat what you said, if you can remember it, but
okay.
I doubt it because that's what, that, you know, anyway, go ahead.
They see that we're doing that. And so what they want to do is they have a narcissistic injury. So they see that we're contracting separately from them. And that kind of triggers that fight or flight thing where they're like, oh, now we have to control these people specifically to keep them separated through class or gender or whatever the sidetrack thing is that they're trying to do.
Choose your own divide.
Choose your own demise. And so we're doing separately from them. We're doing them separately from, and that's the problem. That's the main issue. They want control, and they, as narcissists, they don't like being irrelevant. They really want to seem relevant as dictators. When they're dictators, they want control, but they want people to like them while they're being dictators.
Singularity. Okay, so that's the whole thing.
Yes.
Their singularities. We're trying to be not a collective like a hive mind, but a collective of productive, independent, communicative creatures interacting together, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when they go into that narcissistic behavior, it's all about self. So when I was going to ask you earlier if you've studied network effects, it
Ooh.
Is so powerful. And
yeah.
it's a brand new
business. That's a good topic.
I would say that it's probably along the same lines of control as silent weapons for quiet wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you know that?
No, it's similar because it has to do with the control of not only distributing of information, but the distributing of information, but the way that we do so, because they want us to be
exactly.
Yeah, they want us to be also. They also want
us
to be reactionary. They want us to be very reactionary as we do so, and because we're kind of calm, we don't seek vengeance or spite or pettiness against the people that harmed us. And we're also not seeking closure. A lot of people think that we need apologies. Like, no, we expect that we're not going to get them because it's kind of embarrassing for people to have to admit that they were wrong on something they championed
Absolutely.
For such a long time.
Yep.
And actually, we're not holding it against them at all. We just want them to change and adapt. So,
Ty, I offered to make form letters for these apologies.
Did you?
Yeah.
No, as you know me, like at this point now, I'm like, but people, you know what's funny is that I don't say anything. So people come up to me in private when I'm out and they go, you know, you were right about that, right? I mean, my spouse was mad at you, but you were right about that. I'm like, okay, that's all I need. I just want you to change your behavior. It's not about me. I don't need validation. You know who does? Narcissists. Narcissists need validation. I don't need it. I know that I was correct. I'm just upset that you don't – I'm sad for other people because I feel like they're harming themselves and their family when they don't need to. That's what upsets me. I'm not upset about – you can do whatever you want to me. I don't care. But I don't want you to harm you and your children and your families because you believed in something that was false. Yeah.
That's a giving away of your energy too. I've realized this. Okay. So with this new job that I do with the Let's Go Help, which is just a whole nother kettle of worms and always something worth delving into as well, between the contracts with the government that you do to get that money back. But that is our money. And so I've talked to you about it. I've talked to Lily about it, a bunch of people. But aside from that, I see this huge community. It's a pretty amazing thing that he's built. And he draws really good people. However, you can't force people – I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. What were you guys on right there at that end? Because it was really good.
The non-apology thing is just the wanting people to survive regardless of whether we got validation.
Yeah, I think it was collectivism, you know.
Collectivism.
But the thing is, you can't make someone know or even want to take care of themselves.
There it is. There it
has to originate from self. You can give someone a hand that wants to reach out to you, and you can help propel them, and then they can help propel you, and it can be beautiful, but you cannot force someone to care if they are harming self. That has to originate from within.
If you want to keep this saying, this is the saying I use a lot for people. When they don't, they're like, I don't understand. Like, here's the thing. I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you.
It's even more than that, though. It's like, as an anorexic, nobody can make me eat that food. They can try to help me want it. They can prepare it for me. They can listen to my likes and my dislikes. But in the end, I have to be the one that physically takes that spoon and fork and put it into my mouth. And
there it is.
You can't force someone to learn. You cannot force someone to even listen to what they are damaging themselves with. It doesn't matter if you're talking health, mentality, lack of action, or curiosity, as you mentioned.
Yeah. You can't help people that don't want to help themselves. If they don't want help, you can't help them. They have to want help. And then they're mad about the help that they get because they think they think people are going to do things for them if they help them. No. It's also important for us who are people who are claiming to help people, because I know a lot of people that are like, I wanted to help them and I got frustrated. No, you wanted to help them the way you wanted to. Help them the way they need. They've asked you for a specific thing. Don't overexert yourself. Don't give yourself more. Just give them what they need and allow them to reconnaissance to do it themselves. Because if we do it for them, they're never going to learn how to do it themselves. You know what I mean? They're never going
to
learn.
Because you have to do it for yourself and the things that and people and creatures that you're responsible for. And you can't live their lives, you know?
Yeah, you can't.
It's amazing.
And I'm telling you that like when I get involved on a personal level with somebody who I know who needs help, who desperately needs help. It's always something that ends up not helping them and hurting me. But you know, my resources are strapped, but one resource that I have is a platform and a standing to teach people how to do it for themselves, even if it's having to do it on the side of the road, you know?
Your platform has unintended consequences, like protecting people that you didn't realize you were protecting, which is what I went through. I realized I was protecting people. I had no idea, because they realize that if they make the things they're doing too public, that's a problem. So people come to me going, we know that if something happens, that alert's going to go off, and they don't want attention to what they're doing behind the scenes. So like we have the stamina and the platform where people were messaging my parents. Where is he? What's going on? He's not going to disappear like this. He told us specifically that something, if he disappeared, would be a fucking problem. And people were looking, it makes people question. It makes them, that's very dangerous in this society. It's very dangerous. Questioning is very dangerous. It's very dangerous. And I like that. I like that we're in danger because we haven't done anything. We even said go after these people or do this. We said if we go missing because of the things we said, there's a problem. Why are they cutting out your tongue? Because they're afraid of what you'll say. That's what it is.
Correct. Yeah. And you know, and I I know my mission is bigger than this. So, you know, that's part of the faith thing is that one of the most important virtues that we have is faith. And, you know, even when it comes to, like, the Bible lists spiritual gifts, right? And so, like, what, and I don't want to get too technical on this, but the Bible lists very specifically spiritual gifts that are, that start with speaking in tongues. I don't really want to have a speaking in tongues debate at the moment, you know, but that's just what it says in the Bible. That's your first connection with God. We can go into the fact that babies also kind of, when they're first born, they have these sounds that are not English. Obviously, they don't come out speaking the language of the parent or anything like that. It's a learned thing. But the first thing you can see with a baby is that they try to, like, vocalize. And that, I believe, is speaking in tongues. I think that you can
being a mother must be so beautiful. I'm just so jealous of you guys. Being a mother must be so beautiful. I see the beauty and I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous of you. I can't even tell you. I can't even begin to tell you. So.
Well, it definitely is a blessing. And, you know, just be a part of a village. You know, you are a vital, you know, part of these spiritual gifts that I think, start with the collective.
Yeah.
Right.
I realized a lot through especially arguing with the conservatives that I had divine masculine qualities that I think kind of caught them off guard because I got kind of viscerally protective of children and women out of nowhere. I don't know what happened. I just kind of was like, do something else to them. Like I was getting super protective out of nowhere. And I was like, why is that happening? I was like, oh, I see. I see what our function is. I get it now. I didn't as a gay male before, but now I'm like, come to a child. Come to a child. That's gonna be the last thing you do on this planet. That'll be the last thing you do on this planet. Your pronouns will be was, were. I'm not doing it. I'm not having it.
Yep. So. Exactly. You know what, Ty? So am I. As a female, I have this divine masculine energy to protect children. And
are you kidding me? You're worse than us. We read the book. Beware a woman's scorn, honey. Don't even try. Don't even try.
Right, exactly. And when it comes to protecting children.
Try it. So scary. Y'all are scary as hell. So
Kate is with us.
No, when it comes to protecting children, we're learning from you how to protect children because you were like, I'm correct.
That's a part of the disconnect that they create. Because it does depend on a relationship and even a culture. There are cultures where even the women didn't have as much interaction with the children.
You're right about that. Okay. Yeah.
So with my husband, and I'm sure with Danielle as well, there were direct interaction with the fetus with my husband during pregnancy. So the actual physical act of carrying the child, no. Without technological intervention, that's not going to happen. However, there is nothing when they talk about creating children from two female genomes, have you heard about this?
Yes.
That's terrifying, like any of their manipulation. They're going to change things badly, you know? There are two parts to a whole. There is a masculine and a feminine. You cannot have a real baby without both parties.
Yeah.
Agreed. And that's
in their brain. Yeah. That's in their brain whether they want it or not. Isn't gender the seventh principle of natural law? Your left side is male, your right side is female. So they're wondering how gay people happen. That's why. We're centered more to our feminine than our masculine. But that changes up. And also they say this in Twin Flames. You meet yourself in the opposite. So I've heard straight men talk about I've met myself as the masculine in a female, and that's why we balance. I was like, that's it. That's it right there. That's it. I mean, like, it's the balance of those energies. Gender is a balance of the cosmos. It really is. It really is a balance.
Yeah.
And we understand this even as gay people. We understand this. So
our culture has created a perversion, and it is not the perversion that most people think of when they make assumptions.
Indeed.
And think of perversion.
Assumptions. You said it.
Okay. Yeah, but so when I say perversions, I mean that when you really take boy parts and girl parts and you separate them and you give the girl a Barbie and saying that pink is it, like that's it. Like you get to play with dress up and pearls, you know, and I think Ty can probably relate to the costume image
yeah.
that I'm putting on here, right? And then
yeah.
and then boys
yeah.
have to get the G.I. Joes, you know, and prepare for war. Right, like
wait, do you want to hear weird shit when I worked in retail for 8 months? This was the
yep.
weird shit. This is what convinced me that you were right about this. I worked in retail and I worked in toys. Okay, so I worked in toys while I was working at a thrift store for 8.5 months. I would watch what the boys and the girls would come in to buy for our toy section. The boys always went to the same thing. No matter who was with them, what color they were, what same sex partners were with them, and the girls always we had sections for them because we children would tell you what they wanted. The children would tell you. Here's what the children want. Don't talk for children. They're not stupid. They're not stupid. They know what they want. The girls
yeah.
wanted Barbie shit and purses and bubbles, and the boys wanted Transformers and cars every king time. Every time. You hear me? I worked there for 8.5 months. They know what they want. They know what they
want.
This is the genetic thing. This is the genetic thing.
All right, hold
really
on.
Is.
Let's let Kate in just because Kate's just
hey,
getting here. So.
Kate, great. Yeah, where's she been at? You better come here, girl.
Hi.
Hey, where you been, girl? Where you been?
I was working. Well, I was painting faces for Easter. So I can speak to this conversation, though I'm not quite sure what the genesis of this discussion is.
A lot.
Speaking about
a lot.
Children and, like, preferences, I've noticed, and this is a little window onto part of my life that I don't usually discuss here, but as a professional face painter and working with children, there's been a profound change in children in the last few years where...
Can you speak up
there
just a little
a
bit, Kate? I know you're driving, but
yeah,
can you speak up a little
I'm
bit?
I'm so sorry. I am driving. If it's too much, just let me know.
No, it's just a
I've
little bit low, and I really want to hear this.
Well, boys now have permission to get their get a rainbow or get a butterfly or get something pretty, and girls have permission to get a dragon or... I'm trying to think, you know... Right when we were opening up after the pandemic, I remember I did this one birthday party, and the birthday child was super, the kids had really low affects because they'd been masking, and so nobody was
right.
smiling, and it was just super weird and sad, but, yeah, there used to be a real shaming, I sound so dumb, but... men, if their son wanted a rainbow, dads would act pissed.
Yeah.
Sometimes moms would be, like, really self-conscious or mad at their child. And now, I do try to still try to, like, if I do a boy bunny, I'm going to put a little blue in that, like, the ear. But if it's a girl, maybe, like, orange and pink or rainbow. Like, I do still gender stuff, but it is,
yeah.
like, boys have permission to be colorful, get some flowers.
Yeah.
I did do a party where the boy was super feminine, and he wanted flowers, and he was wearing a flowered shirt, and, like, the mom was just really into the boy being feminine. I don't know, like... I think it's
Those are what we call dandies,
nice
by the way. We call them dandies. Those are dandy
yeah.
boys.
Like,
they're actually straight. They're actually
Andy
straight,
Ryan?
but they. Yeah, well, we call them dandies because they're straight boys that actually really enjoy the feminine aspects, like flowers and colors, and but they're still straight. They happen to be more in tune with their feminine, so their divine feminine, so which is different.
I don't
so.
Know.
Right.
I mean, I don't know about this particular child that I'm thinking of. Oh my God, what a sweet child. Goodness, like, also his mom had me do Day of the Dead face painting for him for Halloween.
Interesting.
And he wanted a super feminine, like, flowers, swirls and curls,
and
he might know. Some of them actually know when they're before they were my age. I only knew when I was 16. Some of them know when they're early. Very few, but some do know when they're that way already. Well, I just want you to know that's a thing
nowadays,
that does exist.
Nowadays,
well, and then my sister,
like some parents really want to encourage that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's fashionable.
Right.
Go ahead, Sabrina.
So my sister was never feminine in any way. She would resist it, fight with my grandmother, and then she's still straight. So it goes all ways, right?
Exactly.
It's when you try to force any perception on children. And then in the Victorian age, boys actually were dressed in pink and girls were dressed in blue. So again, that whole
did you just say that? I love you, Sabrina. Sabrina, I don't know who your husband is, but we're getting married right now. Do you know how long I've talked about this shit for so long that they switched the colors? Baby blue was designed for fucking women and pink was designed for men. It was rouge was created in the 1700s for men. Rouge was created in the 1700s for men. That is so ridiculous. I love you.
They would dictate color by your hair color. So
I love you so much. I love you so much.
Would wear red. A girl that had blonde hair would wear blue.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yes. And when I say this, people get so mad at me when I say this to them. I'm trying to tell you, I switched it. Pink was designed for men. Pink is a color for men. That's really what it is. It's so ridiculous.
So
I love you. I love you so much right now.
Can I tell you a story about pink and how it was my favorite color? Just like every little girl loves pink so freaking much. It's so funny. But when I was a little girl, I was going to join before you go into the Girl Scouts, there's the Brownies. And I was just so upset that it was called the Brownies. And I said, is there another group I can join called the Pinkies? So anyway, I was really into pink.
Yeah.
Go on, go. Go. Leave.
Did not want to be affiliated with Brownies. But now I realize
that's adorable.
Some of us are like, hey, puppy, can you get away from me? Like, there's just dogs everywhere. We're like, hey, can you? Enough of that. There's enough of that. So funny.
I just think, exactly. There's these very, I think, purposeful lines that are being drawn. And the powers that be have to tell us and also are laughing at us at the same time. You know, like they just put it out there.
Because they're changing it.
Because they're changing it. And now
they're being masculine.
Yeah. And because of this, because of all of this, the social norm today, I don't want to get really political on this, but today, isn't it like the White House's Day of Trans?
Which has existed before now. It's existed before now, but the fact that they did it on this day is very specific, and there's a reason they did it. So.
Yes, so that the perversion of the resurrection of Christ.
But Easter is already a perversion itself. I mean, Easter isn't Easter. Easter, they've proven by the biblical accounts that the timing was different for the resurrection and all of that, and it was tied to what we were talking about earlier with Ostara or Easter, depending on how you pronounce it. It's not trying another perversion. It's all a perversion.
Well,
but you know what's funny about that is that people in my circle, they were mad about because they wanted us to fight. They wanted us to fight Christians. I was like, we're not inviting that. I'm not fighting Christians today. They did that so that the gay GLBT community would fight Christians. They want us to fight Christians. That's what they want us to do.
Oh,
and I refuse to do this. I won't do it. I won't do it.
Okay, let me say something. So I believe the powers that be put it on the same day as the old pagan holidays to keep the people interested. Like when they were switching over, they wanted to, just like Christmas, that's going to be on Saturnalia. So they're just hey, let's keep these people partying. Let's keep them happy. They had their old celebrations. Well, here's something new. Although, here's here's something weird. Sorry, this is a little...
Catherine, you better tell these bitches. You better tell them.
I just found out that, okay, so Christmas was put on Saturnalia, and so a lot of Christians were like, oh, no, we're not doing Christmas. This is...
tell them, bitch. Tell them.
We do not want a Christmas tree. We do not want Christmas. So that was
Saturnalia. Saturnalia. Saturnalia is ruled by black. Courts were, judges were black in court. Saturnalia. Okay, just saying. Anyway.
But how weird is it? How weird is it that for the resurrection of Jesus, supposedly Easter, whatever that is, we're going out into the park and the kids are chasing around little colored eggs or plastic eggs nowadays. They don't even bother to color an egg. It's just plastic.
Yeah. So can we do this real quick? Can we do this real quick, everyone? I want you to celebrate with me the fact that I was not murdered on Easter about a year ago.
Aww.
We learned through Hunter. Remember Hunter? Good times. So. Mm-hmm. That day, we left my father's house. We went to Easter celebration, and then because we had nowhere to live, so we were staying in parks. And then later, that's when that chaos that you saw happen that night. We started being attacked and stalked. We stayed in a park overnight on Easter night. Never ever, homeless people, are you listening? Never ever stay in a park on holidays because you become a fucking sacrifice. We witnessed shit that you will never believe. That's why people thought we were on meth. They thought we were on meth. They sacrificed homeless people during those holidays in parks. And we saw a woman get murdered and we were left. We were like, we have to leave. We have to leave right now. And it was really bad. It was really, really bad. And if we'd stayed longer, we would have been there. And when I called Hunter, he was like, oh, yeah, I should have told you, don't stay in parks at night. Where do you think your homeless people are going? Where do you think they're going? There are sacrifices for them, for Moloch. I had no idea. I had no idea this was happening. Do you understand that? I had no idea. We had to run for our lives for 2 months because these people were like, you saw what happened. No, we didn't. No, we didn't. We didn't see that at all. We saw nothing. That's ridiculous. So homeless people, be forewarned. Do not stay in parks. Do not stay in parks that late at night. Don't do that. There's a problem there. So, like, I learned so much just through my experience of being with that person. That's why I'm like, actually, you know what? I don't even regret being with that person because I learned so much about having to survive while being homeless. They are on our ass all the time. It's incredible. It's incredible. Wow. It really is. It's really crazy. So,
speaking of sacrifices, I'm driving, and I'm sorry if there's a lot of extra noise, but I just passed this mural, and it was of like a doctor in scrubs wearing a mask with boxing gloves and angel wings.
Yeah, okay.
Isn't that cute?
Okay.
They are saviors, the doctors who are going to vaccinate everyone, put them on remdesivir and a ventilator. They are the heroes.
So this is why me and Sabrina earlier were talking about, like, when you don't experience the things, it's easy to dismiss us as being like lunatics or right-wing fanatics, but unless you've lived that life, you really don't understand our experience. You just don't get it. You just don't get it at all. And we're trying to warn people. Cat Williams, all these people are trying to warn you. People that work in the industry are telling you, hey, there are some things that you're not paying attention to. And P. Diddy's a living example of that. He's a living example. Because now people that didn't believe us are like, well, now we kind of see what your point was. Yeah, we know. Give it time. Be patient. Wait. Humility, patience is the most underrated virtue of all the holy virtues. We just talked about it. Patience. Wait. We didn't get the reality of what happened to Martin Luther King Jr. till 1997 from the trial of Martin Luther King Jr., from Dr. William Pepper. So he was murdered in the 50s, but we didn't know that until 1997 when everybody, the FBI killed him. They admitted it. This is not me saying the FBI admitted in court to killing that person and then paid his widow. Give it time. You'll know about the bridge collapse. You'll know about everything else. Give it time. Give it time. That's all I'm saying. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. so protect yourself in the meantime.
It's incredible. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. And that's why they're challenging the rest of us that know things to be a little bit more nice and kind and patient with people, because we want them to reach our level, but they're not going to reach that level yet. They have to experience it.
Pragmatic. We have to be more pragmatic.
Be pragmatic about it. Let them come to it in their own time. Now that World War III is approaching them in their hometown, they're like, okay, they're starting to calm down a bit. So let them get there. Welcome them with open arms, because they're expecting us to, like, turn them away. No, we're going to accept you, even though you betrayed us. We're going to accept you, not the dark side. You know what I mean? We're not the dark side. So we're going to let them be wrong and not judge them for it. It's fine. We were wrong, too. Weren't we wrong about Obama? Weren't we wrong about a lot of things? We were wrong about a lot of things. It's fine. So
I know tons of people who still think they're right. They are still right. They will always be right. If they die of myocarditis, happened to get myocarditis. They did not do anything.
Exactly.
But you're not trying to get those people. You're that are still there. Can still come to us, but they need us to not be reactionary. They need us to not be reactionary.
You're a little excited.
Right-leaning conservatives, you see what I'm saying? So we need to be the middle ground where they're like, we see that you're talking actual truth without punishing people or being petty or vindictive or, you see what I'm saying? So that's why I won't turn on the migrants. People want me to turn on the migrants. I'm not migrants because it's not their fault. They're not the cause of it. They're not the cause. They're the product of it. Trump is the product of it. They're the product. So let's unite where we can. Let's unite where we can. You know what I mean?
When you talk about cognitive dissonance and the fact that people can't accept certain things, they don't want to accept that they were wrong, it's a lot deeper than that, though. We're all complicit. If you have a phone, if you use electricity, if you use public transportation even, it doesn't matter. Unless you are living in the Andes in a rock hut with your, the little creatures that we keep in cages.
Hamster?
Guinea pig,
yeah.
Right? That's guinea pig. They're there like cattle, kind of. But they live with them. If you're not living like that, then you're complicit in what the problem is today. Whether you realized it or not when you started out, and to admit that is very painful. That is one of the most painful things I've ever gone through, to admit my own complicit behavior in the problems that we face today. The complicit behavior I'm using right now by using this phone and this electric light and computer.
But don't you think that saying that we're complicit is kind of like if scientists had a maze and there's some rats in the maze and it was some little experiment to make sure that, you know, the rat goes towards the cheese or whatever. Like, that rat
that's
is not complicit
that's
in that.
To see the cage. And once you see the cage, if you continue with those behaviors, which, yes, we are sort of forced to. I'm not going to argue that point. And yet if we all as an entity said no, which is the meme with the guy standing out on the diving board over the edge of a chasm, if we all said no and behaved in a different fashion, we would no longer be complicit. But we don't. We still drive our cars. We still, and I'm not even saying that all of these things would have to completely go away, but it all needs to be approached with a different perspective. But we don't
like
force
an
that into, you know?
Yeah, we have to nurture alternative systems.
Exactly.
I'm so jealous of all three of you. I want you to know. I'm very jealous of all three of you. When you guys start leading the revolution, when men start accepting that women are going to lead this revolution, I'm like, God damn, y'all are going to knock some bitches down real quick. Anyway.
But even there, though, right? When women say, and I think that you're right, because I see women being stronger than a lot of the men around them in time.
You always have been. You always have been. But we we bow to you, darling. We bow to you right now.
You support us. Because it's our turn to be supported. It is still needing the masculine energy to agree and support the overall movement, or it can get nowhere.
Right.
Yeah.
If you look at the book of Deborah in the Bible, I know it's the resurrection day, so I keep going back to the Bible. But if you look at the book of Deborah, this is what Ty says. History doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. You know, this is what's going on right now. I think that we're, you know, in one way or another, we're, you know, recreating the characters in the Bible. And one character was Deborah. And this was in a lawless time. And there were no righteous men to be judges of men. So Deborah, with her husband's permission and support, was a judge. And she was a fantastic judge.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, a judge of men in a time where men were too lawless to judge themselves. And I really do think that that's what's going on.
You better quote it, bitch. Quote it.
Bible according to Danielle. Yes. Gospel according to Danielle. That's what I'm seeing right now on mass, though, with women. You know, women are the ones that right now are having to protect their children. You know, I'm not saying to take the law into your hands, but there are, you know, very, very clear laws in this country, in the Bible, in basically every other major religion throughout history that says to protect children. And I think right now,
did you know we're switching roles now? So like you guys are taking charge of the political, the legal, and everything else, and the rest of us are like, let's stay in guard. So we're staying in guard. So now we're like, let them do it, because clearly they're better at it than we are, because we are fucking delusional idiots. I love men, but I am them, so I get it. No, I get it, because I'm a man, so I'm like, we're delusional, kind of. So, like, if we protect them while they do the actual real litigation, then it's done. Do you understand? I'm like, protect the women and the children, protect the women and children, protect the women. So
the thing is, then
conversely, we have the other side, the left, so-called neoliberal left, which is not a real liberal class. They're hiding behind women. They're saying, like, here's this woman. This makes us liberal. Like, here's this black woman. Like, putting people like that in positions of power to try and fool us into thinking they are doing the right thing.
And also taking too much power to women in court over children when they shouldn't be, when they're putting men out of the capacity to provide for their children or to even see their children when they haven't done anything wrong and things like that. When we're talking about a perversion by the elites, that's a perversion of the women taking back power. They're doing it in a wrong-headed fashion, right?
For sure.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well,
you'd
be surprised how much bullshit I get because I defend you in this way, and as a gay male, they're like, why are you doing this for them? I'm like, I'm not doing it for them. They're telling me. They're informing me. Don't pretend like I'm the end-all be-all because I'm a male. Like, there's that part, too, where it's like, hey, no, they're the ones who've been instructing me the entire time. I'm just following their lead, really. That's the reality of the situation. But, okay, let's pretend it's just men. That's cute.
Well, and I think something else that we should acknowledge here is that as we get closer and closer to the last colonial secret that they're going to give up, and they will fight with every tooth and nail that they have to keep control of this, is the, you know, this sexual perversion of our children. And that is something that we should just all be aware of, that as this fight intensifies, will intensify, we win at the end of the day. But it is something that, you know, that we need to be aware of. And this is something that everybody has their expertise, and Pedogate is mine and Ty's. Pretty sure Sabrina's as well. Not sure about Kate.
No,
I can't do it.
I can't. Yeah. It's too much. It's something I want to come at the problem from the core. You know, I can't fix something that's broken. I want to try to find a way to heal so that we no longer go that direction.
We also have an obligation to protect the children of the future. Knowing the things that they do, even with a basic knowledge of it, it's like that's when all of our papa bears need to come out. Because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like that is the one thing. Our children are the one thing that they should not be able to divide us on.
Period. And you, by the way, you taught a lot of us men, by the way. You, all three of you taught us. Because remember, because we're men, so we don't really have compassion for children. We don't really do, or anybody. Because remember, every dialogue that a man has with another man is instigated by possible threat of violence. Every single one. So we're used to being hostile and aggressive in this way. But I've had to learn through you all to be compassionate to people and understand. And sometimes I have to shut the fuck up and go, you know what? Let me just sit down for a minute. Let me just sit the fuck down and then figure out what the fuck's going on. So you're teaching men how to be divine feminine within themselves as well without it being some sort of a problem. You know what I mean? It doesn't define our masculinity. It's just a part of us that we're not allowed to acknowledge. We're taught to be super brute force. And so now that we're like, okay, we see what they're doing, how you all have to live, where we don't have to live in that way. We're not in that way, so we have no idea. So like it's like, okay, so we're learning a lot from you guys now instead of just telling you what the fuck to do all the time. So I'm glad that dynamic has changed. I'm just very happy about that. So.
And Danielle, I did also study Pedogate. I don't know if you remember, but I gave you that video called What We Know So Far.
Yeah.
Pedogate, What We Know So Far.
I do remember now.
Like, I was way into it. I was studying it for like a couple hours a day for a while, months and months, and just kind of fried my brain in a way, diving into that. It's so scary and weird.
I was trying to extend, but we do have a show coming up right after this, Moving Beyond the Matrix at 6 o'clock. So I'll just say this. When it comes to Pedogate, I'm not saying that everybody needs to go on a deep dive. I mean, there are people here ready and willing and able to take you down, the library rabbit hole of information on Pedogate, but it's come to the point now where everybody's about to be exposed to it anyway. And so the deep, dark rabbit holes that needed to be explored in order for people to get the information out to the masses has been. And so to Sabrina's point, what do we do from here? We can't save every sexual abuse victim. We can't. I've even had people call me and say there's a truck stop in X and X city of California that is doing this, that is selling children. How do we help them? I couldn't help them. That's on the micro level, and every micro level problem is a macro level problem, right?
There it is. Correspondence, law of correspondence. That's it.
And so this group of individuals that are here on Resurrection Day have, I think, all been trying to figure out how to change things on a macro level. And I don't think that leaving the system completely, and, more power to the people who want to leave the system completely. You know what? You guys go do what you do. But I think that this is a system that I built and our consciousnesses, collective consciousnesses built. And I think that we need to take it back. We need to take this infrastructure that we have all dedicated a lifetime of energy to, and we need to take it back for ourselves. What is stopping us from doing that?
Yeah.
The way of doing that? And the first three things that we all think of, food, and on the show, at least, food, news, and health. And so that's why, the collective group of individuals here, sovereigns here, who call into this show every week and participate, are trying to change a problem on a macro level. And so our individual micro level failures are all part of the process. But knowing that we all are on the same journey and we win to take back the collective consciousness for the better, that's why we're here. That's why we're here on Resurrection. So we've got 60 seconds left, guys. I'm so sorry.
Just so proud. Just so proud to know all of you. Just so proud. I can't even believe. I'm just like empowered. I'm empowered to do more right now.
Throw some herbs, you know? Like, there's, that's like the, you know, everybody's like, oh, you're going to save the planet by growing herbs? No.
You will.
Yeah.
You sure damn will.
Yeah.
You sure will. 100%. 100%.
That broke the camel's back.
Because remember, Daniel, I shared that with you. I shared it with you, Daniel, right? If everybody had their own chickens, 20 people had chickens for their house, they could invalidate the entire agriculture industry. Like,
yep,
we could do it. We could do it ourselves.
And
it's done.
You're not on Collectively Rewilding. I don't know what to say, right? You guys have a fabulous day.
We love you all.
Yeah, happy Easter.
We love you all. Happy Resurrection Day.
Next time, guys. Next time.
Bye.
Yes.